This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 182 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And I'm John.
John, I've determined, and I know, we watched Mr. Robot last night together, so this is gonna, we're going to have to rehash a little bit of what we talked about last night, but I know I mentioned this last night. I don't know if I have enough hours in the day to watch all this stuff. Because it seems like, I don't know, maybe... But it is last year, I don't know if we're actually watching anymore, or I'm watching anymore than I was. I just have less time to watch it in. Because I used to watch shows at work on the overnight shift.
Right.
And now I don't have that option.
Well, this also happened last season and the season before that. When the fall season first hits, we always throw in and get all these shows under our belt. We start like reporting on all of them. And then as we get a few weeks in, maybe a month in, we start separating out like the shows we want to talk about. You know, This Is Us's and Mr. Robot's from the shows that were like, yeah, I watched it, whatever. Or I'm just not going to watch that one anymore. You know, like kind of where I've gotten to with Evil.
No, it's weird because you bring that up.
I do.
I never watched it. Glad I didn't based on what you said. However, I only added Prodigal Son, Emergence, and Batwoman.
And Stumptown.
So I only added four shows to the list.
Technically, you added Schooled because you weren't really watching it last season.
I only added four shows to the list I'm going to go with.
Okay.
But I don't actually see me dropping any of them.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it could happen, but I don't see it because I enjoy all four of them. Well, okay, I enjoy three of them.
Which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But no, like I said, there were still, each season there are always shows that like we start off getting hot and heavy on, and then after a while we're just like, yeah, I watched it. You know, like I pointed out to you last night, Perfect Harmony. I love it. It's another half-hour comedy show that falls with, you know, Good Place and Superstore, but I don't need to report on it each week. It's just good. It's fun. I may say that. God Friended Me, my favorite show of last season, and I don't really report that deeply on it because it's just good. There's certain things that we want to talk about, bring up, and delve into, and there's certain things that we're like, eh, that can wait.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to just start out talking about the CW TV shows and get them out of the way?
Yes, because unbeknownst to you and me, Arrow did not come back this week.
Yeah, I thought it did, because I had actually messaged you, like, what time do you want to record today? I just have to watch Arrow. And you're like, well, Arrow wasn't on. So I was like, yeah, guess I'm caught up.
I was looking at my DVR, and I'm looking through, and I'm like, geez, where is Arrow? And I checked the listings, and it's scheduled episode one is coming on this week.
Well, I thought it was back.
So. Me too.
So
that still leaves us with three shows.
Yeah, Batwoman, Supergirl, and The Flash. And Supergirl came back first?
No, Batwoman. It goes Batwoman, then Supergirl.
Yeah, because I don't watch them on the CW time. I watch them on the app after the fact.
Right. The after app.
I'll say this, actually. I'm going to get this out of the way straight away.
Oh, okay.
So when I went on to the CW app to watch these shows, the crawl screen at the top popped over, and it showed me Nancy Drew. And I had no interest in watching Nancy Drew to begin with.
Right. It's a Riverdale spinoff.
Nancy Drew is associated with the Hardy Boys more so than Riverdale, but it's from the producers of Riverdale.
Well, I was going to say, in this TV world,
oh, really? That's what they're saying?
She's like a spinoff of Riverdale. Oh, yeah.
Well, anyways, what caught my eye was that you have kind of like her eyes, and then in the background there's a lighthouse, and it's Portland Headlight. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I hit play because I wanted to see if they had it in the opening credits to see if it was Portland Headlight. Long and the short of it, I watched maybe 8 minutes and said, fuck this, and I Googled it. And it takes place in a fictional town in Maine. So the new Nancy Drew, which used to take place in Illinois, I believe I read, the original series and all this other stuff, this new one takes place in this fictional town on the coast of Maine. It's even called Harbor something, whatever. So this is not the Nancy Drew that you maybe grew up watching as a kid. Did you watch it?
No.
Okay, so this is
definitely... No, but I won't. I've seen enough previews.
But no. But this is definitely not the Nancy Drew that, like, my mom read when she was a kid, let's just say. Because right. Nancy Drew's been around for a long, long time. And every other TV series about Nancy Drew, young detective kid or even teen or young adult or whatever.
Right.
No, the show opens with us getting the rundown of her being living mysteries when she was a kid and then discovering the mystery that her mom has cancer and then her mom dying and then her not wanting to be involved with darkness anymore and yada, yada, yada.
How does a kid discover the mystery that her mom has cancer?
Because they're trying to keep it from her.
Oh.
So anyways, but regardless, so everyone, of course, every single character on the show has a hidden truth or some shit, right? And she narrates
like
the whole
real
thing.
Life.
Well, but more dramatic because it's CW. She narrates the whole thing. And I think it was like maybe 5 minutes in, the first scene is her fucking some guy. Which surprised the hell out of me because like it literally starts out with like you hear like you see something banging against the wall, like a shelf or something, and like it's shaking and you hear like bed noises. And I'm like, and it's slowly panning back. And my thought is it's going to reveal like, something else, like whatever. No, it's literally her riding some guy. Now, granted, it was a quickie because they have their clothes on. They just, you know, just had to get
and
the
CW.
Had to get the naughty bits out, and then she runs off to be some waitress at a thing. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'm good, and I shut it off. So yeah, it's definitely like they just basically took the. I feel like they bastardized Nancy Drew for what it was.
Yeah.
You know, like. I'd say like they're doing with Riverdale, but like Nancy Drew was a beloved franchise from when my mom was a kid of all these books and then a TV show in the 50s and 60s or 60s or whatever, maybe even a radio show and on till now. And now it's just another teen drama. So I thought it was kind of the shits.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. I wasn't going to watch any of it.
So then I put on what I really came here to watch, Batwoman, and boy, it did not get any better.
So, as with a lot of female superheroes or female-centric superhero shows and movies, people took to review bombing this on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, they were talking about how brand new shows like Stumptown came out, and when Stumptown came out, it had 47 reviews total, I believe. Batwoman had over 2,600 negative reviews.
It's terrible.
And that's just people going on there to try to drive down the score.
I hate shit like
that. Yeah, and I was like, that's just bullying. That's just terrible. They haven't even watched the show yet. And then I watched the show, and I went, well, I'll bet you some of those negative reviews watched the show and said, I've got legitimate gripe here. I don't support bullying. I don't support review bombing. However, I will say that this show was garbage.
So I enjoyed Batwoman in the crossover last year. I think we both did.
Yeah.
We both enjoyed her. We both enjoyed that world.
Yeah. What happened?
I don't know. This is weird. It's like normally we watch a pilot and we could say things like, well, it was the pilot. They're trying to throw everything in there. They're trying to get the soul, you know, the show sold. So they want to do this and this and this. No.
Right.
She already kind of debuted in the crossover.
Yeah.
With her own costume.
Mm-hmm.
This is a backstep.
This is a huge backstab.
This is now like us before she became Batwoman instead of us jumping into the world where she is Batwoman.
Yeah, and I don't know why they would do that.
And the series was already sold and ordered like 13 episodes or whatever it was. And yet they still seem to drop the ball on this.
Why did they? If they had done flashbacks, it would have been okay.
Yeah.
You know, an Arrow-style flashback.
But I don't want more Arrow-style
flashbacks. Oh, I don't. I don't either. But that would have explained, like, meeting up with Lucius Fox's, I guess, grandson.
It's Luke Fox.
Yeah. It would have explained some of this stuff. But the fact that they basically made this an origin story when, in the crossover last year, she was already fully established.
Yeah.
And people in Gotham knew of her, and she had the red wig and everything. Like, she was fully decked out as Batwoman. And now suddenly we're getting the origin story. Why are we going back in time?
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I don't either.
I didn't like that.
I didn't either.
When we started watching it, I'm like, well, I say we, but when I started watching it, I was like, she's not Batwoman yet. What the frig?
Yeah.
And then, so they have to give us the whole story of Batwoman's disappeared and her dad. Batman disappeared. And her dad is running. Oh, and Batman caused her. She blames Batman for the death of her mother and sister. And her dad started this security company.
Crows.
And they protect Gotham now, because I guess the police still can't. And she was sent away, because we find out that, you know, her and her lesbian girlfriend there, when they were in military academy together, got caught. And because of the Stone Ages, apparently this show lives in, they were deemed bad.
Yeah.
And her girlfriend then was like, I didn't kiss her, she kissed me, blah, blah, blah. So only Kate gets kicked out. But of course, her driving force to come back to Gotham is that her girlfriend gets kidnapped. It was disappointing.
I go a step further. I say this was not disappointing. This was garbage. Like, disappointing would have been like, oh, they got a few things wrong. This one, first off, as you said, she blames Batman for the death of her mother and sister.
Yeah.
Because Batman didn't rescue them. He was too busy off doing other things. When we get the full story.
Right.
He tried to save them.
Right.
And also had to save a school bus at the same time.
Correct.
And he saved the school bus, and their car fell off the bridge.
Yeah.
Even though he thought that he had, you know, weighted it properly.
He thought he had secured it properly with his bat hooks or whatever. But what he didn't take into consideration was the shoddy craftsmanship of the automobile.
The bumper.
Yeah.
The trunk.
Whatever. Yeah. The vehicle broke before his grappling hook broke.
Yeah.
And that's why it fell.
Yeah. After she got out, but her mother and sister.
Right. Didn't get out.
Air quotes, drown.
Oh, yeah, because. So she breaks into Wayne Enterprises because she wants to look at Wayne's computers, because she knows, oh, that must be. This will give me what I want to see.
She wants to see who kidnapped her girlfriend.
Right, right. And of course, Luke Fox is there, and the long and the short of it, you know, she finds the Batcave and realizes that Bruce Wayne was Batman, and then.
Because she happens to recognize Martha's
pearls.
That he keeps on display on a very tiny display stand that, if you nudge it to the right a quarter of an inch, unlocks the fucking Batcave. The one thing that a thief is going to zero in on that room, and is going to go, holy shit, I got to grab those, and you nudge it, and it opens up the Batcave. I'm sorry.
I didn't consider that, but that is pretty...
You know, at least in The Dark Knight Rises, he had it locked in a safe.
That's true.
This was stupid. It was so stupid. And why is he displaying them? As like a constant reminder of his dead mother?
Yeah, because he's sad.
It made me so angry.
Well, I hated the line that they keep putting on the teasers for it, and we get it in the show, which is just like, well, I need you to alter the costume. And he's like, that costume is, literal perfection. It will be when it fits a woman. I hate that. No, that was dumb.
Yeah, that was dumb.
I didn't like that.
How about just, well, I need you to make it so that it fits me.
Yeah, I need it to fit me. That would have been a better line. And then she goes out as Batman.
Yeah.
Rescues her girlfriend.
Yeah.
Saves the day. And that the other...
And touches her girlfriend's lips, because, you know...
The other backstory was the fact that they were going to finally shut off the bat signal and desert Bat... You know, Batman's deserted us, so now after 3 years of hope, we're going to desert him, and yada, yada, yada. And, of course, it's Kate's stepmother who's leading the charge on this. And her stepsister's running some sort of underground private back alley doctoring.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Of course, we meet the villain, Alice, based on an Alice in Wonderland type thing. And fuck it, Alice is Batwoman's sister.
Yeah.
Who allegedly died in the crash, but apparently has been alive all these years. And
knows all about her, and now Kate knows about it. Even though Kate has worn this same necklace every day for her whole life, and it reminds her of her sister because they each had matching ones, she has to look at the gem in the blade that Alice left behind and then pull out her own necklace to look at it and compare it like she's never seen it before.
Well, that's for the benefit of the audience.
I know it is, but it's stupid. It's kind of like people who could – I've been thinking about this lately. People who are telekinetic and can move things with their minds, why do they use their hands? You're not – your hand doesn't have anything to do with it. If you're moving it with your mind or Magneto.
Because it looks cool
exactly.
when you take your hand
it's,
and whip your hand.
It's the benefit of the yes, audience. Yes. Like, otherwise, they'd just be standing there
well,
staring straight ahead.
It's the same thing when you watch, like, I remember watching old episodes of CSI back when it was first on or even, you know, and I'm sitting there, and they would have to come to the deduction by working it out and talking to this revelation that is so blatantly obvious. And that always infuriated me because it's like, it's, you're being stupid to your audience. But Magneto needs to move his hands to make shit do work because, you know, that's what he's got to do.
Yeah.
So I'll watch the second episode.
I'm going to watch him up through the crisis.
Basically, yeah. I'm going to stick with it to the crisis.
It has to get better. And that's the other thing, too. They set this up that it could have been flashbacky because she's writing in a journal saying, Bruce, I want you to know my story. Like, we could have seen old man or old woman Kate
yeah.
writing this and then have it flash back to, you know, this is how I found it. This is how. That would have been perfect. But instead, it's her currently writing. I want you to see my story. I mean, it was just, it was bad. They crammed way too much in. They already told us the secret identity of the villain, which was one of the cheesiest things and one of the cheesiest reveals. So it did nothing to win me over. In fact, it made me feel worse about the show in general. And again, she was there in the crossover.
I know. Why I know. She was established. We didn't need to go back and have this origin story.
No, we didn't.
So, Supergirl.
Yep.
Yep.
Lena knows that Supergirl is Kara. She's running virtual reality
simulations to try to kill her.
Yeah. And she's created a new AI named Hope that's supposed to get smarter but never actually have ambition or drive so that she can't betray her. And when Kara finally does come clean with Lena, she acts like she's all happy and, you know, oh, I'm so glad that we could put this behind us. And she was going to upload the identity to the Catco worldwide servers at 9 p.m. so that the world could know. And instead she decides not to because now she wants to destroy her even more.
Well, now that Supergirl trusts her to tell her who she is, now she can use her to benefit her. Oh, fuck it. Just fuck this show all of a sudden. Just like... I watched it. I want to like it so much.
I do too.
I really did enjoy it.
When Calista Flockhart was on.
And I want to like it so much because I like Supergirl. I like most of what I say. And I'm a big Superman fan and I really, really, really want to like it.
Yep.
But like, I just didn't give a shit about this episode. There was one, there was one funny bit though that I did enjoy, which is, okay, so Supergirl gets a new costume because she fights a dinosaur and her cape gets ripped. And so Brainiac,
Else that's happened.
Yeah. Has this huge meltdown and makes her a new costume. But now it's a new costume where she can just whip her glasses off fast and all of a sudden it makes her, but it appears.
It's nanotechnology. It's, kind of like Tony's suit. Right.
Instead of just a costume she puts on.
Yeah.
And now she has pants.
And she's excited about that.
Yeah. So, but there is one funny scene when the villain in this episode
Midnight,
when John Jones takes her off to the stage away from the civilians and the innocent people, and then they all show up and then
they all do the superhero pose.
Yeah, but my favorite part is when Alex runs in from the side and she goes, how do you change so fast? Like, I enjoyed that thoroughly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the best part.
It was. And we set up that John Jones's brother is alive and the one who's behind all this and is going to torment him and torture him. And we've established that Brainy and Dreamer are not good at dating because Brainy doesn't trust himself.
Yeah, and Dreamer's like, I don't care, kiss me.
Yeah, somebody new is running Catco because of course they are.
Well, the reason why is because Lena sold it to this girl to make Kara's life miserable.
Right.
Like, she made my life miserable. But, of course, Kara stands up to her, and she's not going to let her back down. But Jimmy quits.
Why was Jimmy in the Guardian outfit again?
I don't know. I groaned. Jimmy quits because, but, of course, when this girl bought Catco, she also, all the staff suddenly now had 3-year contracts.
Yeah. Like, you all have brand new 3-year contracts with non-compete clauses in them.
Right. Well, that doesn't work that way. No. You don't sign and agree to it. Like, right. When a company gets sold out from underneath you, they don't just automatically renew contracts for right. you. Especially if you never had one to begin with. I don't know how many journalists have contracts to work for a newspaper or clickbait online organization.
Maybe they would. I could see that because of the non-compete clause, basically saying that, you know, we want to keep you here and not have you take our best ideas over to a competitor. So that part I could see. Okay. But you're right. But you have to just have automatic.
Right. You have to sign those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and sit down and agree to them.
So Jimmy quits and James quits and she's like, but you are.
You'll never be a journalist again.
He's like, that's part of the adventure.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we see is Miss Tessmacher's back, but then someone puts a bag on her head.
Yep. Yeah. We have to assume it's Leviathan. Or that organization that is coming.
Or maybe Lena grabbed her.
Maybe.
I don't know. So that show happened.
Flash. Okay. I gotta say,
I enjoyed Flash.
Every time we do this and we say Flash, I always start to break into the Queen song. And I love that Cisco finally did it. He's like,
finally.
He's like, I've been saving this for 5 years till just the right moment.
Yes, I've been waiting to use that song.
It was so perfect.
And they did it, and I liked, again, this was, I it's almost like they've gone, God, that Legends show is really, really funny. People seem to like it. Maybe we should interject that into other places.
Yep.
And when Iris is like, really, Cisco? He's like, come on, think about it. He's literally running in and out of a black hole. When is there a better time? And she's just like, okay, point taken.
Yeah,
or valid point, or whatever it was.
She's like, all right, I accept.
Yeah, you're right.
This was, though, another jam-packed episode. It's like they tried to get as much into it as they could, including the air quotes, villain.
Yeah.
Like, it turns out that it's a kid who's really smart with science and likes to do live streams, and he accidentally created a black hole machine.
Right.
And when he touched it, half of his brain went into the black hole, so it started showing up in places that were emotionally strong for him. So they had to come up with a plan in one episode to hook his brain back up to the brain part that's in the black hole,
right.
Which would involve quantum nanowire, which doesn't exist except for in the future. Oh, but wait, it's in Nora's gauntlet. Quick, I'll grab that wire and thread it into your suit.
Cisco's amazing.
So that you can go into the black hole. Because I already created a black hole destroying bomb that we can't use, so now I'll do this. Then you can run in and out of the black hole to pull his consciousness out and bring it to this room that we've created to let you see the future, which isn't quite ready yet.
But that room was, say, that room was something they at least were working on. They talked about, like, you know, they had been working on it for a while type of thing. So at least that was not like he just invented it for this episode. So
it was quite a stretch. But like you said, it was a Legends kind of stretch where it was goofy and pretty fun. Caitlin's having problems with Killer Frost.
Yeah. Killer Frost basically kind of wants to live life.
But she's afraid to.
Yeah.
She's scared of having a life.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't say, Jesus, take the wheel in this.
yeah.
When they were talking about
it. Close.
Well, because, of course, Barry.
Ralph.
Jeez, I'm crow. I think it was Harry. Ralph figures it out.
Mm-hmm. Because he's a very good detective.
Yeah, he is a good detective. And basically he's like, look, so he tricks Killer Frost into appearing and then says, hey, just talk to Caitlin, ask her, you know? Because Killer Frost's like, my job is to come out when Katie needs protecting and go back in my cage. No, just ask her, what's the worst? And then finally they have the conversation and Caitlin's like, yeah, of course, live a life.
Yep.
But, of course, then I go into thinking like, well, Killer Frost can't have a boyfriend then.
Sure she can. It'll just be a really weird relationship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So then Killer Frost has a boyfriend. Caitlin has a different boyfriend, but it's literally the same body these two guys are, you know, dating. So it's
same as dating twins.
Nope. No, that's two separate people, actually.
Basically, at the end, you know, Nora's stuff has been disappearing. Like, the recording that she made shorts out inside the time vault. And then Iris's purple jacket gets sucked into the wormhole, and she's all upset because she knows she has to give that to Nora someday.
Don't worry, Barry retrieved it.
Yes, he did. because, you know, inside of a black hole, he just happened to find that one thing.
Right.
Because the Speed Force is more powerful than the force of a black hole, which I did appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know? But basically, this was a lot of setup because they're worried about the Crisis. The Monitor showed up
at the end and basically was like, well, you know, Crisis is coming.
You have to die. The end.
So billions can live.
Yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed the episode.
I did as well.
Yep.
Yep.
Which I was glad that at least one of the three I enjoyed.
Yep.
That's why I was like, I gotta still watch fucking Arrow. And you're like, oh, it wasn't on. And I was almost like, yeah.
Oh, and remember the cold opener, too. Apparently, this summer, we've seen four different Godspeeds. Four different guys.
Yes, yeah.
Who have no vocal skills when they catch them, but they can run at Godspeed's speed. They have his powers, his costume.
Cisco makes reference to the fact they sound like a modem.
Yes, which is true.
Which is true, but kind of dated for a lot of people who have never, because we're actually reaching an age.
Right.
Oh, we're not having reaching. We have reached an age where, like, my son does not know what anything besides high-speed internet is.
Right.
My 13-year-old.
Yep.
You know, like, he did not grow up in an age where we didn't have high-speed internet for him.
Yeah. Unlike the rest of us that grew up in an age at first with no internet.
Right.
There was no such thing.
I remember getting my 14.4 baud modem and being like, yeehaw!
Here comes the information superhighway.
Look at it load. It's an image. Oh, there's the nipples. I can't wait to see the rest. 5 minutes later, there's the vagina. Yeah, I'm done. Anyways, yeah, things are different now.
Things are very different now. So, yeah, that was the CW shows for the week.
We want to wait and save the CW crossover news to later.
Sure. Yeah. Let's do that.
What else did you watch this week, sir?
Oh, so much stuff. Are you caught up on American Horror Story?
I am caught up on American Horror Story.
Okay. So, are you and I in agreement or disagreement? Where I got to the end of the third episode, where we got the reveal that the slasher there, the... whatever, the Zodiac Killer or whatever he's supposed to be, Richie Ramirez.
Ramirez, yeah.
Is actually Montana hired him to go kill Emma Roberts' character. That was the tail end of the third episode. So the third episode, we find out that Nurse Rita is not Nurse Rita. She's actually a psychologist who wanted to get Mr. Jingles released.
Well, just Mr. Jingles. She's a psychologist who's fascinated with serial killers and why they do it. And so she wants to see them in the wild, if you will.
Which we find out in the fourth episode.
Right, and so Mr. Jingles is...
Yeah, she wants to see an apex predator in the wild and how he works. So we find out that Rita is not really Rita and that she actually kidnapped and tied up the original Rita, who we get to see for, you know, 10 brief seconds in a flashback. And then when they free her and Mr. Jingles comes in and drives an oar down her throat.
Yes.
Very, very violent.
A broken paddle.
Yeah.
Broken end first in her mouth and then down her throat.
Yep.
It's a pretty perfect way to die.
So we get that in that episode, which was kind of groan worthy for me because I was like, Jesus, they really are hitting all the tropes. And then, like I said, in the last 5 minutes, Emma Roberts is trying to escape because fake Nurse Rita had drugged her because she wanted to see what would happen. Then the Night Stalker, that's who it was, comes up and goes to get her, and she takes off.
Night Stalker, yeah.
And Montana's like, why haven't you killed her yet? And they make out a little bit. Oh, we got to see the cowardly guy who claims that, you know, he kind of murdered somebody in college. We got to see him get decapitated really cool on a motorcycle.
Yes, well, after he deserted, like, his buddy fell into a pit. Yeah, okay, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Apparently the psychologist put up all these booby traps in the woods. Which, how are you viewing an apex predator in his natural environment of killing people if you make it so that his victims are getting injured by running through the woods?
When would she have had time for this?
Well, and
it was a deep hole.
And she's not worried that Mr. Jingles is going to step in a bear trap or get caught in the net or fall in the damn hole?
Right.
Yeah, like, so that's my problem with a lot of that.
Yeah. And then we find out in the fourth episode. So I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Really? Now we're going to do the twist that Montana wants him to kill this. So we find out the backstory there where this guy, he shows up at her aerobics class.
Her midnight jazzercise.
Yeah, because those happen.
You know, maybe they did in California in the 80s. Who knows?
One guy is, like, giving her shit because, you know, she's talking to him. And he doesn't like the music that's on there. It's the David Bowie.
Yep.
He doesn't like that music because he can't get his dance on, and he wants, like, some Donna Summers or something. So Richie guts him and hangs him in the corner of the locker room to show her that I didn't like how he disrespected you, and I didn't like how he handled you and talked to you. She's like, oh, you did this for me? And then they have sex, and then they're like, well, we got to clean this up. He's like, oh, I've had plenty of opportunities to clean stuff up. I was a janitor once. And then she says, hey, would you kill for me? He's like, duh.
So we get the backstory that, what's her name?
Emma Roberts' character.
Emma Roberts' character. I love, this is so great. Brooke, the guy she was going to marry, who was obsessed with her and was accusing her of sleeping with his best man, the best man was her brother.
Montana's brother.
Montana's brother. So when he kills, so she wants revenge for her dead brother. Because she claims that Brooke really did fuck him and is lying.
She doesn't have proof. She's just sure.
Yeah. So she wants Ramirez to kill her. That's why Ramirez attacked her to begin with in L.A. and then followed her to the camp.
Yep.
So then we get this kind of cool, in episode four, we kind of get this cool standoff because Brooke wakes up and she runs away from fake Nurse Rita and gets caught up in a net and is just hanging there.
Again, more booby traps.
Yeah, another booby trap net. And then Jingles or Ramirez, one of them shows up because Montana finds her and goes and tells Ramirez, hey, you got to go
finish the job.
Finish this off. I mean, she's in a net. She's trapped. So he shows up and then Jingles shows up. And then Ramirez is like, I respect you, but this is my kill. And Jingles is like, no, it's my kill. And then they have a fight, which was kind of badass.
It was, yeah.
And Jingles wins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, size makes a difference and stuff like that.
Jingles wins. And while watching the fight, fake Nurse Rita and Montana runs in the fake Nurse Rita. Then they fight.
Yep.
And they end up rolling down a big embankment. And whatever happens, they crash out. And then Brooke manages to escape the net. So once the fight is over, she's disappeared.
Yep.
And Ramirez comes back to life at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of some devil chanting wakes him up and shit.
And so. We also find out...
Oh, you mean the biggest reveal of the whole episode?
Jesus, we find out that the woman who's running the camp, in all actuality, killed all those people, not Jingles, and then framed him because he was just the lovable oaf who was nice to her once. But, you know, she basically pulled a Montana and said, kill those people for me because they're smoking and making fun of me. They're smoking the reefer.
And Jingles wouldn't. And so because, you know. Because
he was a passive kind of guy. He was a big, giant dum-dum.
So we find out that she murdered everyone, cut off everyone's ears, put it into his stuff, set him up to take the fall, which he did. And then he got
electroshock therapy.
And basically... He convinced us. So they didn't plant fault memories, but he just convinced himself that he was the killer.
Yeah, because it had been drilled into his head so much.
Yeah, and he killed all these people.
So now he became a killer.
But now he doesn't want to kill anymore.
Right.
Because he found out. And she shoots him a couple of times. And then she turns and kills the big dick guy. I can't think of his name. I don't care.
I don't either.
But she kills him and then blames Jingles for it.
Yeah.
And then they all try to escape, and Jingles is on foot somewhere. And who does he run into on the bridge?
I'm trying to remember now.
He runs into someone on the bridge and just...
Wasn't Chet. Chet's all injured. Oh, he took out Birdie, too. You know, Birdie the cook, and tried to cook alive the pretty boy.
Yes. That was gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm still not convinced.
Like, oh, I'm totally going to keep watching this.
I could tell you're enjoying it.
It's just, okay, it's...
But every episode has some new stupid twist. They're like,
I know.
Oh, by the way...
It's absurd. But I almost feel like they're embracing their absurdity.
I'll give you that.
You know, it's almost like they're embracing their absurdity.
where do they go from here? Half the group is dead.
They've killed a lot of people. And this is day one.
Yeah.
Because, like, the kids are arriving in any minute now.
Yeah.
So the busload of kids still has to show up.
Oh.
Yeah, I just, yeah. And when the lady there reopens the camp.
Yeah.
When,
murderess?
Yeah. Leslie Gross from Margaret Booth. When she kills that guy, she's like, oh, thank God. It's been like 14 years or whatever it is since I've done this.
My fridge,
yeah. You know, so she gets a lot of pleasure out of that. A lot of pleasure. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm enjoying it. It's better than last season. Last season I just couldn't get into.
Right.
But I am enjoying this season. I still have not gone back and watched the New Orleans Witches Coven season. I don't think
you're not missing anything now.
Did you watch Prodigal Son?
Yes, I did. I still love this show. And actually, I kind of had it in news, but I'll say it now. It's the first new show of the season to get a full season pickup.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
In this episode,
we got to see a bit more of Mom and what happened with her when Dad went away.
They really lead you to believe that Mom knew what was going on.
By the end of the episode, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he has that follow-up dream, and he's dreaming about the woman in the box, and Mom comes over and goes, you need to stop talking about that. You have no idea what your father's capable of.
Yeah.
So it almost seems like Mom made the woman in the box disappear.
That's kind of what I'm getting the feeling about.
And Dad is, you know, she actually goes to see him now, but we see a flashback as well, and he's making all these comments to her about how he's her most attentive lover ever and how she belongs with him and he's the only one that, you know, can complete her. Almost makes you think that maybe she had some of this, you know, she was part of this whole thing. I don't know.
I mean, I definitely got the feeling that she was involved.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Yeah. And she's hiding it. And you also get the sister who is just like, she finally has her breakout or whatever, which is, I don't know who Dad was. I never knew him. I don't remember him. And you made sure I never had a relationship with him. So, no, I don't know what Dad can do. I don't know what he can do to Malcolm. Or was it Malcolm? Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know what he can do to Malcolm.
Right.
So, because you had said back in the first episode that she probably had some killer tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking maybe we were going to see them come out right at this point, but we didn't.
Not yet.
So it's probably still.
I'm thinking end of the season.
Yeah. What was the big mystery of this episode?
Oh, it was the removal of the brains.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember exactly how it tied in. So many things flow together. But, yeah, they basically they found somebody who had been scaring people to death. Putting them on LSD, remember, because he was experimented on, and so he wanted to take his revenge. So he was finding all the doctors and people in charge of the experiment, dosing them with LSD so that they freaked out and had fear attacks and then removed their brains afterwards. It's a decent show. I enjoy it.
It happens.
Yep.
Yeah, I am enjoying this show as well.
New Amsterdam?
I really, 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 really like his new replacement.
I do, too.
For his assistant.
The military guy?
Yes. I thought he was fantastic. Are we sure it's today? Yep. Why is anyone here? Because you're 5 minutes early. Why would I be 5 minutes early? Because it shows character if you're punctual. I liked him a lot. I liked his interview. I liked, you know.
Yep.
It was kind of reminding me of, like, almost like, I think it was in Rambo 2 or 3 or something like that. One of the Rambo flicks. I don't think it was the first one. But basically, like, he talks about, like, when he was in the military, he was in charge of, like, a big group of men. And he was in charge of, like, he drove million-dollar tanks and helicopters and this and this and everything. And he comes back here and can't get a job and gets spit on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this guy wasn't getting spit on. What, you know, he couldn't, you know, but he was having trouble finding a job.
Mm-hmm.
He's found that his military service doesn't really help him in trying to find a job, as far as, like, people get kind of iffy about him, whatever it is.
Right.
But in where he was, he was responsible for a shit ton of men, a shit ton of people, moving things around, communicating, sure organizing.
That thing ran smoothly.
Yeah. And there's, what, six tours he had over there, whatever it was.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like him as a character.
I do, too. And it was, again, it was a typical New Amsterdam, you know, medical mysteries. There's a thing where they need to fill a board spot. And so he was constantly trying to find somebody to fill the board spot so that they could get at-home nursing care for some of their people. And, you know, the woman who's in charge of the board, she's like, look, nobody's going to go for it. It costs money. You need somebody who's famous or a celebrity or very rich, blah, blah, blah. And so he kept going through different people trying to get to it. And then finally the military guy at the end, he's like, well, what are we supposed to do to help this woman? He goes, get her a dog. He goes, you want me to get her a dog? And he's like, yeah, get her a dog. And then hire her a dog walker to come over two or three times a day to walk the dog.
Yeah.
He's like, wait, and check on her. And he goes, yeah. How much was the in-home nursing going to cost you? And he's like, $2,000 or something like that.
$200 a day?
Yeah. And he's like, I bet you could get a dog walk for like $20. He's like, wow, I like that idea.
Yeah. But also we get finally him attaching to some of his emotions about his wife dying. Mm-hmm. And having to deal with that.
Yep.
Because you know that's going to be a big factor down the line.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I thought of this as we were talking. We forgot to mention one thing in Flash.
Oh.
The new overarching villain, who was Mohinder Suresh.
Oh, that's right.
And that's not his real name.
We kind of talked about him a little bit, but we didn't.
He's a friend of Caitlin's from med school, and his mother died of a rare disease where, you know, the body attacks the healthy cells. And he basically tells her that he's come up with a cure, but it requires dark matter to do human trials. And Caitlin's like, nope, not going to happen, because he wants her to use her in at Star Labs and get him some dark matter. So then he finds a way to get a dark matter weapon, I guess, and injects himself, because he too has the markers and he's going to die. And then you see it ticking down, but then like some black venom goo starts crawling up his arm, and that's kind of where it ends.
Well, basically, what Caitlin says is like, well, we can't just inject people with dark matter. It could make them metas. And, you know,
and he's like, you made a meta cure.
And he's like, but she's like, but that's, no, it's not the same. Well, the meta cure takes the dark matter out of you.
Yep.
So if the dark matter is what's saving you, then the dark matter, unless his thought is like the dark matter then cures you and then you can take it out because you don't need it anymore.
Right.
But, you know. And of course, we find out the reason why he was so passionate is because he has it too and he's going to die.
Yep. So that was it. I just suddenly remembered that.
Yeah.
But after New Amsterdam, we've got the good doctor.
So the good doctor.
This episode was called Claire.
Really heavily focused on Claire. I enjoyed this episode.
I did as well.
I think it's because kind of this season so far, Sean has not been the central focal point of everything.
Right.
And this episode, he definitely wasn't. This episode, he was mostly a secondary character.
This was like those episodes of House or Scrubs where they would, her story, their story, stuff like that, or the House episodes where House would be off doing something else and we'd get to see the supporting character, Cuddy, A Day in the Life of Cuddy.
And really, yeah, that's true. House was a great show.
Same guy, David Shore.
Yeah. But in this episode, Claire really is the 100% focal point. It's about her and her life, essentially.
And let's not forget, we actually got Wilson in there as well.
Yes, I know. I thought that was hilarious. Yes. Claire, she's going to finally perform her first surgery, possibly. And so we see her prepping at home for it, getting ready, trying on different clothes, getting ready for work, this and that. And then her mother being like, hey, you need my pee?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, okay, she is going to perform her first surgery. This girl needs her gallbladder removed. And you see Claire at home before rehearsing what she's going to say, and she pours out all the alcohol, except this bottle of champagne she decides to hide in the cupboard because she wants to
celebrate
maybe after her first surgery, you know. And of course, this girl that she's going to perform the gallbladder removal on has got issues. Her mom's got foster kids in the house for some reason, but yet all her mom does is work, and so she's stuck taking care of them. And
yeah, three foster kids that she brought into this house.
Right.
You know, the girl, I understand, you know, she's kind of pissed. She says, I have to be a parent. I have to cook. I have to clean. I have to take them to their school. I have to take them to appointments.
Yeah.
I don't get to be a kid. And it's driving me insane.
And these aren't even my real siblings. These are three kids my mom brought into our house for some reason, which they never tell us why.
I think it was just adopting. I have a friend whose parents did the same thing. They basically, you know, have adopted like 8 or 9 kids so far.
Adopted or fostered?
Fostered.
Okay.
But they do it basically because they want to help these kids out. They love kids and yeah.
I like kids, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. No.
Claire, of course, oversteps her bounds and then
gets her hooked up with a therapist,
gets taken off the case, and then, of course, gets put back on the case because the girl wants her, and the mother finally comes like, okay, maybe there's something wrong with my daughter because her mother was in denial and yada, yada. And then in the background there, we got Sean and Carly. He gives her a questionnaire of things to fill out.
Like 86 questions.
Right, And Claire's like, maybe people don't like things like that. And so Sean freaks out that maybe he did something wrong. And so he asks Claire to go talk to Carly for her. And so she does. And Carly was just like, first of all, I thought it was great. I don't like small talk. You need to butt out of Sean and I's relationship. We're just fine.
Yeah.
And Claire doesn't even get offended by it. She's like, I guess you're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, also Sean's the one that asked her to.
Correct. So she does the surgery. It's successful. She's all excited. Yeah. And then she gets a phone call from her mom. And, you know, she already had a voicemail from her mom. And then the phone rings. And she answers it. But it's not her mom. And then cut to the most non-realistic scene in the world, which is her mother died in a car crash. And Claire just walks up to the scene of the crash.
Yeah.
Her body is still in the car. There's nobody around it. They allow her to touch the car.
Yeah.
They don't even stop to question and ask who she is. She literally just walks by people. She looks over and there's 3 cops just milling around, not even paying attention or just socializing among themselves. For some reason, there's a fire hose strung out on the ground, but yet there's no evidence of any fire or fluids in the road. Because guess what? She hit a lamp pole. Head on. And the car wasn't even that damaged, but she hit her head on the windshield and died. Oh, and what's on the floor of the car? The champagne bottle.
Uh-huh.
So now Claire's going to blame herself, probably.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I thought when I saw her mom was dead? Good. This story's over.
Yeah, it was a bit rough. I get where they were going with it because they wanted to focus on Claire. They wanted to give ups and downs, you know, and she was so excited and she had succeeded. Not only did she kind of dodge the bullet with that overbearing mother, but the overbearing mother was like, can I get that therapist number? So she's like, yeah, I did good. And I did good in surgery. Everything's coming up, Claire. And they had to like
and shoot her. And her mom seemed to be getting better along better than they ever have.
Yep. So, yeah.
Let's talk about some comedies.
All right.
This week's Good Place.
Yeah. This show is off to a slow start.
It really is. It's not as enjoyable as it has been.
It's called Chillaxing.
Yeah.
So Tahani's focused on this John guy who was the gossip columnist.
Yeah.
Her and Janet want to give him a spa day to basically turn him around.
Yeah, they're trying to make him realize he can be a better person. And
he doesn't always have to be an asshole.
Right.
And to their credit, like, she finally gets down to the meat and potatoes of things. And, you know, he wants to get better, but right. It's only after he realizes that, yeah, he did kind of hurt people. But that everyone was mean to him. It was...
Well, basically... Tahani comes to the realization that they're the same, even though they're different. Like, he had no money, no power, and he wanted what she had. And then what she had, she wanted more than what she had. They both wanted more than what they had, and that status was important to them to the point where she went to this VIP party, which had an even bigger VIP room. She went into that room, and then she was the only one that was in there all night because no one else went in there because they were just staying in the regular party. But because of status, she refused to leave the ultra VIP room in case somebody else showed up.
Right.
And she confesses all that to him, and he's just like, oh, we are kind of similar.
Yep.
And that's when he apologizes, and it seems like they're legit going to be better.
I loved the way that they got to Chidi, though. Because they had basically given Chidi the asshole there, Dawn from How I Met Your Mother. And yeah. he's just like, well, I can't seem to help him, but, you know, he's doing his own thing. So he's going on picnics and he's relaxing. And Simone seems to be, you know, he's like, oh, it's not really an issue. So then they're like, wait, we know how to do this. And they get Jason to pretend to be John Yoo again.
Yeah.
They basically recreate the first moral dilemma that they had, which was he's a Buddhist monk who's sworn off talking, but then they tell him, as soon as we're gone, we want you to tell him that you're really Jason Mendoza. And he's going to try to keep it private and secret, and he does. He goes fucking neurotic.
Well, the reason why Chidi is chillaxing, as they say, which Michael invented by combining Chidi and relaxing,
which is hilarious,
was the fact that he had no moral dilemmas, no pressure, no anything.
Yep.
Because the other moral dilemma that Chidi had was, what's her name?
Simone?
No, the blonde girl.
Oh, Eleanor.
Eleanor, jeez, I'm grown. Because Eleanor, confessed to Chidi. And so Chidi was feeling, wasn't being tortured.
Right.
Like he was in the original Good Place. And so they had to torture him. And Jason did a fantastic job.
I love it when they were like, Jason, we need your help. He goes, okay, give me the jar. And they're just like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Usually when people need my help, it's to open a peanut butter jar. So I'm ready. Go ahead. And then they lay out the whole plan to him. And he's like, great. Give me that jar. And they're like, do you mean like a metaphorical jar that is this plan and blah, blah, blah. Sure. Okay.
But he does a good job torturing Chidi.
He does. Now. I kept waiting for him to accidentally let it slip that this was the plan, but
me
no.
too.
No, he's just straight up Jason Mendoza being Jason Mendoza.
And then the last thing we see is, I guess, death.
Somebody.
Someone in like a stereotypical Grim Reaper cloak on one of those rail carts that you pump to go down the railroad tracks. And he seems to be very far away from the Good Place, but he's working his way there.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I will say, I told you earlier that Perfect Harmony is good. There were a few key lines in this episode that made me laugh out loud. One of them, he was having them audition to do a solo for Ave Maria. You're familiar with the song.
I'm familiar.
So one of the women gets up there and goes, Ave line. And he's just, Maria! Like, he's so pissed at that point. It's literally the title of the song. One of the guys comes into the church and he sees the other guy looking around. He goes, did you lose some? Yeah, but don't worry, they'll come back when they're hungry. What do you mean they'll come back when they're hungry? Don't worry, they're not poisonous. They just, when they get hungry, they know where to come. Yeah.
Okay, that's funny because it's ominous.
And there's one foreign guy on there who, he was raised in a household where his parents would always make up the names to the TV shows because they didn't like what they were. So at the end of this, he's like, oh, it'll be just like Bert and Ernie in that kid's show. It's okay to be gay as long as you don't acknowledge it. That's what his parents told him the name of the show was. So, which, speaking of which, I got to segue for just a second here. That fake trailer that SNL did for Grouch.
Oh, my God, that was amazing.
The parody of Joker where they do the origin of the Oscar the Grouch story. David Harbour. If you people haven't seen this, you've got to go check it out. It was an SNL skit. But the guy that they got to play Bert did that voice so phenomenally, I got chills.
Yep.
Ernie! Oh, that was perfect.
Yeah, that was excellent because you've seen humans play the Muppets, even the Guy Smiley guy, which was funny because Guy Smiley wasn't historically a Muppet. He is a Muppet, but he was a Puppet Show Muppet, not Sesame Street Muppet.
Right, right.
Because I always go back to Guy Smiley. Barometers are shopping far away. Oh, no! And the barometers fall on him.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I do enjoy that show quite a bit.
Snuffleupagus was a pimp.
Oh, my God. And Prairie Dawn was his...
Prairie Dawn was his hoe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good.
It was so good. Excellent. It was such a great skit. I loved it. David Harbour made a great Oscar. Anyway, Superstore.
Yeah.
I actually took a lot of notes on this one because there was so much that made me laugh in this episode. Like, compared to the last one, I enjoyed so much of this episode.
All right, go.
It starts off with Dina has had over the past couple seasons a longtime rivalry with Colleen from the other store that's near them.
I don't think we've ever seen
Colleen. Never seen or met Colleen.
We've heard her name a shit ton, but we've never seen
her. And Dina just hates her. Well, she's here now in this store because she got transferred when the other store shut down. And Dina is sitting there trash talking her, bad mouthing her so bad to Amy. And then as soon as she's right there with her, oh, Colleen, it's so great to see. You know, that fake love. So basically, Dina keeps telling
Garrick?
Amy,
okay.
She keeps telling Amy that she's going to get her fired. She's going to get her to quit. She wants her out of the store. And at first, Amy's like, no, you can't do that. She's like, yes, I can. And the only way she can get Dina to, like, back off is to say that she'll be forced to write her up. She's like, I don't care. You're not going to write me up. She goes, I'll be forced to write you up in front of Colleen. And she's like, you wouldn't dare. Like, that's how fucked up this rivalry is. But the thing is, we discover it's a one-sided rivalry. Like, Colleen couldn't care less. Probably doesn't even know who Dina is, essentially.
Well, I like when Dina first sees, oh, Colleen, wait, is this on your way to the unemployment office?
Yeah. So, throughout the entire episode, Dina is trying to get rid of Colleen, and she actually enlists the help of Garrett, because she says that this is the only way she'll ever forgive him for having her birds all die.
Yes.
I finally found a way. I said I'd never forgive you. Well, I found a way, and this is it. You've got to get her to quit. It's not even that you've got to get her to get fired. You've got to get her to quit. So, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, Garrett discovers very quickly that him and Colleen have a lot in common, and she's rather attractive. And
I love Garrett's first offensive, which is he gets caught by her locker.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing by my locker? Oh, I was getting in my locker. You mean the one right next to mine? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's like, your locker is that one over there with the Neon Genesis sticker on it. And he's like, wait, you know anime? Yeah, I love anime.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then she opens the you're getting in there now? Yeah, I'm getting in there now. She opens all these fish fella. And he doesn't. And he very poorly covers the fact that he just put the fish in there. Yeah.
But he's also not trying to deny it because he knows he was caught.
Because he doesn't want to get her fired. He doesn't care.
Yep. Oh, that was
Dryer's right. Done.
Yeah.
It's a long one.
And at one point, when Dina's first talking to Garrett about this plan, she's talking about how she has Colleen as her nemesis. And he's talking about, you have so-and-so and so-and-so. How many enemies do you have? And she says, 37. 36, but then my bitch neighbor had a baby. So this kid came out and is automatically one of Dina's enemies.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then she like knocks over, if you don't do what I want, you'll get more of this. And she like knocks the cup over and he's like, well, that's not mine. That's Elias's. Well, he's on my list too. So that's even better.
Yep. Then Dina still has the bag of crystal meth. And she decides that she wants Garrett to plant this on Colleen, or basically drop it on the floor when she brings Amy by, and then Amy will have no choice but to fire her. And that goes poorly because, again, he's over by the greeting cards with her, and they start cracking jokes, and she makes some really cool, funny jokes, and Garrett's like, damn it. And she basically is, like, hitting on him. She's like, I can give you my number. So he goes to Amy and he's like, yeah, we got to get rid of Colleen. Why?
You got to fire her, yeah.
She's like, why? And he's like, because I think I'm going to get together with her. And she's like, that'll destroy Dina. He's like, yeah, but I just can't help it. She goes, why? Amy, she likes anime and she made a couple of jokes. I don't have a lot of boxes to check. So she's like, can you just agree to not sleep with her? And he's like, no, I can't make that promise. She's like, I'm just asking you to not sleep with her. I don't understand what you're saying here. It's just, it's not making any sense. This is going to happen.
So I'm watching this show with my son and he's like, he just goes, isn't he paralyzed from the waist down? I go, well, his dick works. And he just goes, yeah, okay.
13. That's the sex talk from his dad.
Yeah. No, we've had a more detailed one.
That's for a different podcast. Mike does sex ed.
Caught him watching porn.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. So basically at the end of it, he goes out on a date with her. Dean is about to flip out and they convince her that what's happening is that Garrett has agreed to falsely seduce her and break her heart, which is going to destroy her even more. And Dina loves the idea. So she agrees to, like, pay for the meal and the date and everything like that. She's thrilled.
Yeah.
And then Amy says, oh, good news. The other store near here, like, one of their assistant managers had something fall on him, and he's dead.
Had a pallet fall on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I convinced them, and they're going to take Colleen. And she's like, so wait, Garrett's going to break her heart, and I'm getting rid of her? This is the best day ever. But Garrett's actually just going on a date with her.
Yeah, because he likes her a lot, yeah.
So that's going to come out more.
And then, but that's not even the whole episode.
Right.
That was like the backstory of this episode, which ruled it. The major issue in this episode is Mateo was visiting, and he thought that, like, Cheyenne and Glenn were doing stuff, and Mateo's eyes poorly on purpose, so that he would do it better and fix it, because, as Cheyenne said, Mateo, the only thing he likes the most in the world is being better than other people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then he thinks that they got Sandra in on it because she did this mannequin display that was really bad.
And he keeps doing that. He thinks everybody in the store is in on it, so he's constantly walking up to them and telling them that they're doing a piss-poor job and then saying, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for doing this for me. I mean, to feel wanted and needed, it just feels so good.
Yeah. And I don't know. It was very amusing because by the end, Mateo's like, look, guys, stop. I need you to stop this. I'm exhausted. I'm not even getting paid for this.
Taking advantage of me.
Yeah, it was nice of you to try this. And then we also had the third story, which was the union organization.
Oh, yeah, geez.
And we didn't even realize they were at a union meeting because Sandra was talking about wedding plans and kind of took over the union meeting. So Jonah agreed to take over that from her. And she said, that's great because I'm planning this wedding and I'm working my way through all the Fast and Furious movies. So my plate's pretty full as it is.
So he tries to get the warehouse guys on board with the union because they decide after the ICE raid and everything that they really weren't sure. And of course, Marcus is like, well, you got to go through me. And so and while explaining this to Jonah, Marcus mentions, like, you know, if you got to be able to, like, chug a gallon of barbecue sauce just to do it, to get the guys in good graces. So he goes to talk to them, and they all seem to not really be on board with him until he chugs, like, a gallon of ranch. Which, that's just gross.
Yes, it is. Yes. That was my phone going off because somebody is telling me, we've been trying to contact you about your vehicle.
Oh, what's my vehicle?
Your extended warranty is...
For what vehicle are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's the same with, this is your printer company calling. Oh, really? I just need to verify the serial number. Oh, you do? Well, how about you tell me what kind of printer I have?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you if you're right or not.
And why you need to verify my serial number.
Yeah. Liars.
Yep.
Schooled. This was a fun episode. It's called The Rooting of Toby Murphy because there's basically a wimpy kid named Toby Murphy and he wants to be on the football team. And coach is like, no way. And then they actually end up watching Rudy and
his class. Rudy. Yeah.
And so the coach is just like, oh my God, this is the greatest movie ever. What an inspirational moment, inspirational story. So he gets Toby Murphy and puts him on the team.
And basically Rudy's him.
And Rudy's him, yeah, in a practice thing. But then it's like, you'll never see, our last game's this Saturday. He'll never say a moment on the field. But think how great his life's going to be after this. Because CB's like, you can't put him in the field. He'll get crushed. Because CB finds out that it was faked.
Yeah.
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 And he's like, that's okay. I have no intention.
And it turns out that the kid is the nephew of the woman that coach is trying to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Toby Murphy's aunt is... he says her first and last name, which is funny.
Yeah. So when coach goes over there to basically say that he's not going to be. Yes. That he's not going to be playing.
Yeah.
Aunt Julie's like, I can't wait to see him play. I'm going to be there. This is so exciting. I never go to football games, but I want to see this. And he's like, yeah, he'll be playing. Yep,
he'll be there. He'll be on the field. And then, of course, Toby finds out that he lied.
Yep.
And so coach goes over to talk to them. And
coach's line was, holy crap, that really got away from me. I might have just killed Toby.
I like Coach Miller. He's the best character in this show.
He's amazing.
He's the reason why I watch it. Like, yep. Legit. Like, yep. I don't care about CB. I don't care about Laney Lewis. The reason I watch the show is for Miller, because he is hilarious.
And then... Also, the other story was Lainey and the girl.
Wilma.
Yes.
The new science lady.
And having some girl time. And the new science lady's like, no, I don't want to, you know, have anything to do with you. I don't want a female friend. And then Lainey stalks her at trivia night at the bar.
Yeah.
And goes in there and knows all the pop culture answers, whereas Wilma knows all the science answers. So they make a good team and they decide to be friends. And they're going to go together to the Boyz II Men concert. But.
Because Erica couldn't go, but now Erica can go, so she's going to ditch Wilma to go with her friend, and now Wilma doesn't want to be friends anymore.
Because you broke my heart. So Lainey organizes a dance routine to drum up excitement for the science fair because nobody was there.
Yeah,
it's not even a science fair. It's like mold exhibit.
Yeah, mold. So when did this open? It started 2 hours ago.
Yeah. So they get a lot of people in there, and she kind of redeems herself, and then they did their own version of Boyz II Men song with mold in it.
Yes.
Motown filling.
Yeah.
Classic song of my generation. And then at the end, the end credits rolled over the actual Boyz II Men singing.
That was the best. And mold
song.
They sang Mold Town Philly, and it was excellent.
It was phenomenal. I was just like, I need more of this.
Yep. That was a really fun episode. It was good. Oh, and Toby is.
I might have just killed Toby.
Toby, he also wrote up some plays because he read the whole playbook front and back.
Right.
And so the coach used one of Toby's plays, which was a fake out play, mm-hmm. to get the other team to think that they were going to give Toby the ball, but they didn't, and they won the game.
And that's all he cared about. It wasn't that he scored the touchdown, it's that he was able to be on the team playing a game
and have that hero moment, which he did because they used his play. So his brains and his play had them win the game.
And coach kind of gave him a pep talk before that. He's like, I think you could make a great coach.
Yeah. I
give some good plays. And
I gave you the greatest compliment I think I can. You'd be a good coach.
Yep. And to Toby's credit, he was like, that's all fine and good for down the road, but right now I want to play a game.
Yeah. It was a fun show.
Yes. Let's see.
I got Stumptown, Blacklist, and This Is Us, and Mr. Robot to talk about.
Yeah, because you did not watch Emergence, so we're not going to talk about that.
No, the wife was out of town. We'll watch that this week.
I've got those same episodes. I've also got the final episode this season of Adam Rhodes Himself. And they kept calling it the finale. I don't know if it was the season finale or the series finale, but
I hope it was the series finale.
I hope so, too. So Stumptown.
Stumptown.
I loved this episode.
It was a good episode. It has one of my favorite TV actors in it, I guess.
Donald Logue.
Yeah, I hope we get to see him more.
Me too.
Yeah.
He played Bullock on Gotham.
Yep.
The TV series. And he
was in Grounded for Life.
Yep.
It's a great show.
He's a PI. He's a PI who's been around for quite a while.
Yep.
Kind of a shady, scumbaggy PI.
Well, no, we don't learn that to the end, though, because at first when she shows up.
Dude, when she shows up, he refuses to meet with her and then takes his pants off in the office. That's where I'm going with that.
Okay.
He's a scumbag in that respect.
Okay. All right. But basically, she needs 1,500 hours of apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy agrees to help her because she said, you know, after I'm done, I'll give you a cut of my cases for 1 year, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
So it's monetarily motivation for him.
Right.
So they're working on this case where you have a rich guy who got his girlfriend pregnant and now she's worried that she's going to lose custody of the kid to him. But he's got all kinds of money in the world and he's well connected even with the natives.
Yes. Yeah. We didn't think that she was going to be back around for a while.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she shows back up and she's like, you're going to drop this. What's it going to cost to get you to walk away? Cause we like him. And
yeah.
But it gets deeper and deeper. It turns out that like the girlfriend that he impregnated, he met her because she was in college and down on her luck. And so she became a hooker,
a high price call girl.
Yep. And he called up for her and then fell in love and romanced her. But then he was an asshole and abusive.
Oh, he beat her up and abused her. And
so she got away. And now they find out that he's got a new girl who he's doing the exact same thing with.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, hey, when did he tell you? When did he take you to Rome? Second day. Oh, yeah, that's what it was for me, too.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, he told me this in the plane. And the girl's like, oh. So that all was fun to watch unfold.
Well, so Donald's character, Artie Banks, that PI, he gets Dex to break into an office and plant a bug,
gets him to put a tracker on a car, gets her to break all kinds of laws.
Yep.
To do this. And essentially what it is they go to this girl. This woman didn't come to them to say, hey, help me. He went to her to help her because he also thought he could make money off a settlement.
Right.
So they get all the
right across the top, 10%.
Yeah. They get all up to a $200,000 cap. So they get all the evidence that they need because that girl gets them video footage of her being assaulted by him.
Yep.
And they got this guy dead to rights. And so Artie's like, all right, I'll take this and don't worry and this and that. Well, in the interim, someone cut his brakes and then someone shot at them. And then Dex sees the guy that was trying to kill Artie and gets the upper hand on him. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I owned a business. I hired him. He gathered the evidence for me and then sold it to my competitor. And now I'm ruined.
Yep.
And so she thinks he's going to do that. And that's exactly what he did. He went to the creep, if you will, and sold him the video footage for more money than he was going to make off of the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And sold her down the river.
Yep.
Because he's in it for money and he doesn't care. And she's just like, how are you going to confront her? How are you going to look her in the eye and tell her what you did? He's like, I'm not. And basically, he's like, look, who are you going to report me to? You did this, you did that, you did this. I didn't do anything. I didn't break any laws. You did all that. Yeah, I made money off it, but I told you from the beginning that I'm a piece of shit who's out for money, and that's my driving force.
Yeah.
And so I didn't lie to you in that respect.
Nope, not at all.
We'll see each other a few years from now. We'll see each other down the line. You're going to thank me for this lesson. And Dex is like, nope. And then breaks some like $14,000 vase that he has sitting on a pedestal stand to make herself feel better.
Yep. We also learned in this episode that Dex's full name is Dexedrine.
Dexedrine, yeah, like
Dexedrine. He's like, how? Because I had to rewind it, watch it again. He's like, how much did your parents hate you to look at you as a baby and say, you know what I'm thinking of? Generic over the counter cough medicine. And she never gave an explanation. She was just like, let's move on. We also had the backstory there. Well, the side story where the cop is interviewing Gray.
Yep.
Because the last voicemail on the charred cadaver's body was Gray.
Yep.
And so in between dodging the cop's questions and...
He wasn't charred cadaver. He was just dead with two bolts in the back.
I thought he was cooked too.
Nope. Oh. That was the motorcycle guy from Rookie a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So, yeah, in between dodging those questions and trying to throw the guy off and not, cop to anything, Gray goes to visit an associate of the guy who basically they owe money to and says, here's some money. This is what we're going to put it towards. And he's like, oh, I see him occasionally. I could tell him that. Just better make sure that your bar stays profitable because now instead of $250,000, you owe all $500,000 because, your partner's dead. So you owe his money and your money. He's like, that's impossible. I can't do that. Well, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah. Tough shit, basically.
Yep.
So we a little bit more about Gray in that respect.
Yep.
And then Hoffman. And then Hoffman and Dex have dinner together. And they're both there for the purpose of trying to get information out of the other.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was terrible. So,
but there's a relationship that's blooming. Anyhow, speaking of the rookie, we forgot we got to talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't forgotten. It's still on my list.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I had forgotten. So the rookie.
Again, another cold open like they like to do.
Yep.
The rookies are all out for the night. Nolan's being the DD so that they can all have fun. He's dropping off West and they see some guy pushing drugs. He's acting all shady and they could see him do a handoff. And so they chase him down and tackle him and go to arrest him. And it turns out that it's West's landlord. And, that would have been fine in and of itself. But then it turns out, as the captain says, now West's place is considered
undesirable or something like that.
Yeah. So he's not allowed to live there anymore. He's like, you've got 24 hours to find a new place to live.
Yeah.
Period. Like, it's not a request. This will happen.
Yeah.
So West is panicking because his life's already kind of shitty now with the 81 and the, being ridden by his TO.
And he's actually has to repeat his 6-month value evaluation period, whatever it is, probationary period again.
Yep. So yeah, through most of this episode, in between his other things, he's, you know, he talks to this one cop who, where is it?
It's literally like on the grounds of the police department where they've put a bunch of, what is it?
The Westgate.
Yeah. Campers together and everything to make a little, their own community of living.
Yep. Yep, there's a gate there and everything, and they've got RVs. He's like, yeah, it'll be $300 a month. You can live here. It's easy access to the station, blah, blah, blah.
And Wes's TO is like, you cannot live there. Right. That is where police officers go to die.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a lot of other options, so he's concerned, because he only has the 24 hours.
And he doesn't want to move in with his parents.
Right.
He does not want to go back there.
Right. Especially, you know, with his dad being super cop and him being back on the 6-month probation, you know, he feels like that would be a huge step backwards for him.
What happened with Chen and Bradford this episode?
This was the one where the captain gave Bradford a book to read about leadership.
Yes.
And he's like, read it to me, boo. So she starts reading it and she comes to realize that he is a, it's not kinetic, but kinesthetic learner.
He can't read.
Well, he can read.
He can't read well.
He doesn't retain information when he reads.
Right.
He retains information if he's doing something while the information is being presented to him.
But, of course, he can't admit that because that would be admitting a weakness or some sort of disability.
It's considered a learning disability, and she says that. Like, she feels like she has power over him at first, but then, you know, she kind of laughs at it. And by the end of the episode, she hands him an audiobook copy of it.
I think it because she treats it in the respect of, it's no big deal. This is just how it is now. You get help for it. It's not the end of the world. And he comes from the old school world where a lot of people are. I mean, this is kind of, this is life now. You have people like us who accept different things or forward thinking or whatever it is. And maybe forward thinking is not the right word, but more tolerant and acceptable of certain things. And then you have people that are living in the old school world of you don't talk about things, you hide your emotions. Disability is a bad word.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, it can still be, and people abuse systems, blah, 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 I'm not going to get into it, but she actually reads the book and records herself reading it and gives it to him because...
Yeah, she's like, here's an audiobook, and he goes, they don't make an audiobook. She goes, that's why I recorded one. And she's like, as read by the best boot that you've ever had.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But it was cool because, yeah, at first she liked having the power of saying, you know, oh, I know something that you don't want me to know, but then she was like, dude, just... It's how different people learn different things.
And then
Harold
Perrineau makes his debut.
Did you keep waiting for him to turn out to be an asshole?
Yep.
I kept waiting for him to be an asshole or for him to have some major issue or really, you know, be a crooked guy.
Yeah.
He was just fucking great.
Yeah, he came from like the night shift.
The night general.
The night,
what his position is called.
Yeah. And basically, so he ends up working with I almost said Castle, but Nolan. Investigating a murder. And they work well together because Nolan, even though Nolan's a rookie, but they end up working really, really well together. And in the interim, they end up, Nolan ends up running into his ex.
Allie Larder.
Yes. The girl that he was going, that he was in love with and together with. And then he found out he knocked up a girl. And so he walked away.
Well, close. He was with his ex-wife and they were together in a relationship. And then they had big fight and they broke up. They like separated.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, he met Allie Larder's character and he said that she was just amazing and he was in love with her. And the way he told the story was that, yes, his ex came back and said, I'm pregnant. And he was like, okay, I'm going to do the right thing. So it sounds noble. But then when Allie Larder talks to him about it, she says, you left a note on my door that basically said we're broken up. You crushed me. You broke my heart. And you disappeared. So, again, everyone's a hero of their own story. He thought he was doing the right thing,
right,
raising this kid, being the honest man. But to her, he just abandoned her. You know, he ghosted her. They were awesome. They loved each other. They were having a great time. And, you know, he just walked away for another woman is how she saw it.
Right.
So those are always interesting stories.
That's kind of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The Night General, they basically explain, they respond to major crime scenes when everyone else is in bed. And they kind of take over the investigation until an actual...
So the night shift gets there.
Yeah.
It was a good episode.
Yeah.
But so far, every episode of The Rookie is a good episode.
Oh, I know. It's really good. Mitch Pileggi was in this one. Rex, the bail bondsman.
I thought that was this episode.
Yep.
See, I feel like it's been more than a week since I watched it, because for some reason I thought that was attached to the first episode. But yeah, that was this episode. That used to be that was Bradford's CO.
Yep.
Or training officer, TO.
Yep.
Initially, and now he does bail bondsman stuff. He does bounty hunter.
And the guy that he's going after, like, the guy jumped him and he dragged himself over to the bushes of an abandoned lot. Yeah. So, Chen and Bradford go to arrest him, and he's like, don't worry, you know, I'll give you credit for the bounty. But they go to arrest him, and, you know, they call him from his aunt's phone or whatever, and they're like, where are you? And you can hear the echo at the house. He's like, I'm in Florida. And he's like, coming from a closet. So they open up the closet, and he's like, and they both kind of chuckle and put their guns away, because he's just a little kid guy.
Little guy, yeah.
And then he just goes ninja on them.
Yeah, he's like, you want some of this? No, come on, let's go. And then, yeah, he starts doing karate. It's a pretty cool fight scene, actually.
And then Nolan had a choice at the end of this. This is going to come back to haunt him, because basically the overarching crime that was going on was about a kid who was in rehab, and then when he made some bad friends.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we probably definitely want to talk about that.
Yeah. So he made some bad connections on the inside. When he got out, these guys came looking to collect because he had a stash, and he got killed. The dad finds out about this because he recognized the bad guy's voice, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so he knows that it was these people. So he does vigilante justice. And it ends with him in, like, a construction site type thing. He dropped the guy in a mold,
yeah,
and filled it with concrete. And then is going to hang himself because he's like, I've lost my son, my wife's a wreck, blah, blah, blah. I can't go on. So Nolan has a choice. He can either try to stop the guy from hanging himself and save him, or, as, you know, Harold Perrineau tells him, he's like, you need to get over here and save me. This guy's still a victim for right now.
This is the victim, yeah.
Yep. He's like, this is the victim. You need to help me save him because I can't do it myself. Because he finds the guy under the concrete, but he's got to pull him up through, like, 4 feet of concrete that are, you know, still liquid form. But and Nolan does. Nolan turns around and walks away towards the concrete and hears that snap of the guy hanging himself.
Yeah.
So you know that's going to come back to haunt
him. Oh, hell yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Also, Nolan seemed to be pursuing Allie Larder as love interest, which obviously, I mean, he's kind of dating someone now, so.
Yeah. I mean, she showed him interest, but she also showed him hatred.
Yeah, because she's like, I can't believe I'm still this angry with you.
I couldn't either. I mean, that's like 20 plus years.
Yeah. Oh, This Is Us. God, there was a lot in this episode.
It really was. This was one of those where they jumped around forward, backward, in between.
This one was called Unhinged because, to try and condense these to not jump all around. Basically, Randall.
Try to stick with, like, future Randall and.
So Randall, future Randall, his new policy is that he took his door off the hinges because he has an open door policy. If anyone wanted the constituents want to come talk to him, he'll talk to him. So his first day there, he spends literally all day even missing drinks with these other senator guys, the other councilmen, because he's talking to his constituents. There's a lady that works in the office that's got all kinds of experience, more than all of them, and she's basically trying to keep him on track and tell him what you need to do.
But she has wicked attitude about it.
Tremendous attitude.
I know better than you. You're an idiot. You need to fire him because he's your friend / campaign manager.
Right. And Randall puts up with it all day because essentially he's like you – because he says to, like, his friend, his campaign manager fella, you know, she's got more experience than all of us combined at doing this. So, like, we need her. And then finally, at the end, she's just like, he fires her. Because he's like, I can't have someone that's going to disrespect me like that in front of everybody, that's going to disrespect my second in command, that's going to tell me how I need to do things. Because I didn't get elected doing things the way everyone else did things. I got elected doing things my way. And that's how I'm going to continue to do them. Except it is a fire hazard. He does have to put the door back on the hinges, so they got to get a door stop. So that's kind of Randall adult story.
Yep.
There's little stories with their kids, like the lesbian daughter is unhappy with the new school because she just thought she could be out and she made a mistake and told someone that she thought a boy was cute when they asked her. And then Deja finds out that the boy that she likes,
Malik,
yeah, has got a kid.
So she's got to deal with that.
Yep.
Their stories.
But the main point of their story was to mirror what happened in the past with young Kevin and Randall. Because in the past, it was the same thing where, and, Tess even says to Deja, she's like, I used to talk to my mom about this stuff all the time, but now it just doesn't feel right. Deja's like, I totally get that. So they're leaning on each other.
Yes.
Same way that seventh grade Randall and Kevin were leaning on each other instead of mom and dad, because basically Randall thought he was, you know, I'm perfect. I'm going to this big, important school. And, you know, he's got a black professor and he loves the guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, where things are going great. And the guy's like, so how long you been here? And he's like, oh, this is my third year. And he goes, then you should know that you're out of dress code. And he's like, what do you mean? And he goes, your shoes, they're not dress code. You need to have nice suit shoes. And he goes, but these are Air Jordans. This is what Michael Jordan wears. He goes, I get that. And I know you want to look fashionable, but you need to present an image. And that's part of the rules. And I'm sorry, my man, but I got to give you this yellow slip. And so, of course, Randall, being the perfectionist that he is, loses his shit and has one of his panic attacks.
And we haven't seen a Randall panic attack either as an adult or as a kid in a long time. But they established a couple seasons ago that Kevin's the one that can get him to calm down the most for some reason out of everyone when he's having these panic attacks. So he calls home because his mom or dad's got to sign the slip, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And Kevin, like, because Kevin and Kate haven't started school yet. The school they go to doesn't start for another week or a couple days or whatever it is. So Kevin heads out to the school, talks to his brother, calms him down, forges mom's name on the slip.
I love he goes, do you want mom calm or mom rushed out the door?
Yeah. Like,
what?
Do you want mom while still in bed or mom when she's in a hurry?
Yeah.
I got both. So that was young Kevin. Young Kate's story is her and mom do a jazzercise aerobics video together. And Kate, being the stupid kid she is, thinks she's going to lose weight immediately after that one workout.
Yeah, she runs right in the bathroom to weigh herself.
And seems to get discouraged when she doesn't.
Which is not how weight loss works.
Right. Oh, that was the other thing for the young kids is one of the kids makes comment to Randall about Arsenio. Oh, the teacher makes the comment about, like, I got to wear a suit like Arsenio Hall does. And he's like, who's Arsenio Hall?
Yeah.
And so Kevin's like, oh, come on, Randall. So also Jack makes a big mistake at his job. And essentially what it is, he never got the city to come in to approve the water piping or whatever it is. And so they got to lose $20,000 pulling all this foundation out to redo it, to get the inspection done, et cetera. And so Jack gets fired from his job because of it, because his boss is like, there's no coming back from this one, Jack. And then Miguel walks in and basically he's like, hey, look, Jack's been here 20 years. And he's worked his ass off. I'm your best seller. Like, I've brought you hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of deals and sales. And
yeah, he's like, 8 of the 12 richest clients that you have are my clients.
Yeah. And so if you fire Jack, I'm leaving too, and I'm taking those clients with me. So weigh the odds. What's more important to you? The $20,000 we're going to lose on this mistake or the millions I'm going to take with me? Jack keeps his job.
I was going to say, there's no resolution right then, but then later on when they're having their phone conversation and Jack's like, I know we don't talk mushy stuff, but he goes, so what are you thinking? He's like, well, I've still got a job. So you're thinking, yeah, all right. Which is cool. I really like seeing Miguel stand up for him. It's funny. The first episode of This Is Us, when we have that whole thing where we get to see Jack and Rebecca, and then we see at the very end of the episode future Rebecca and future Miguel together.
Yeah.
And your immediate reaction is, what a scumbag.
Yeah.
Oh, he stole Jack's woman. Blah, blah. Yeah. And so you kind of go into it with that bad taste in your mouth. The more we see of Miguel and Jack together, the better of a guy he is.
Right.
Like at the season premiere this year, we got to see him working in the suit store and kind of hooking him up and saying, hey, you know, I won't charge for it. Just keep the tag in there.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Bring it back.
And then now we see him stand up for Jack like, you know, no, I will go down with him. Yeah. I will die on this hill. Really cool guy.
Well, because we see that Miguel and Jack were literally friends for like 20 years.
Yep.
Or better, and then Jack died. And then they've also showed us in the past how Miguel and Rebecca didn't immediately start dating. They reconnected like years later when she found Facebook type of thing.
Yep.
But Miguel is a stand-up guy. We definitely learned that, especially in this episode. And then the show ends up with Jack and the kids and Rebecca all watching Arsenio Hall because Kevin's like, he has to watch Arsenio Hall.
Yeah. I was hoping we could do this as a family.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, next over, the show kind of opens, I think. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
But we see Nikki. I can't think of his name. We see Nikki meeting with the therapist at the VA. And he connects with her. And he looks forward to meeting with her. And in between us seeing all the different sessions he's having with her, starting at the beginning where he's a miserable, you know, slouch, he starts cleaning up his camper, throwing out alcohol, hiding a bottle in the back of the cupboard because you never know, but cleaning it up and cleaning up his life and trimming his bushes. It's a great montage showing how he's getting his life together and getting his shit together and everything, probably because of meeting his nieces and nephews and wanting to be better. And then she comes to him and says, hey, they're moving me. You're going to be reassigned. I'm sorry. And
isn't this how Joker got his start?
Yeah. And cut to him drinking and then going back to the VA and throwing the chair through the window, which is how the first episode ended. So we see that.
That's why he did it.
Yeah. And then we see Kevin. Now they're trying to help, you know, trying to fight for his uncle. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs to get this help. He needs to be here. And basically they're like, look, this is what he did. We'll give him an evaluation, and if he does well and he passes, then, you know, we'll let him come back and, yeah, we'll dismiss this. Because he has to go to the veterans court or not. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He could face like a $250,000 fine and 10 years in jail for his actions and blah, blah, blah. But they would basically kind of dismiss it even or give him a pardon if he goes through the program.
Yep.
So he goes through the meeting and everything, and then after he leaves the meeting, he's basically like, Kevin goes in and says, so he's like, well, he can come back, but you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped. And then Kevin loses sight of him and goes outside and sure as shit, Nikki's in the bar drinking.
Yep.
Or he goes into the bar to drink. Now, before I go there, I want to go back to, what the hell's her name?
Cassidy.
Oh, okay. So Cassidy, the one that we met in the first episode, well, that's Jennifer something, isn't
Jennifer
it?
Jennifer Morrison.
Okay. She, her son Maddie's out in the waiting room with Kevin. They bond over snacks and Nintendo Switch. Yeah. And then she comes out and she's basically, I loved this, by the way. And she's like, hey, what's going on here? Oh, nothing. This is my friend Kevin. Hey, how's it going? Kevin Pearson. And she goes, yeah, a 40-year-old guy being friends with my 9-year-old son. Hey, I'm not 40.
And she goes, hey, he's still mine.
He's still mine. And it's not what I thought. She's like, no, it's okay. We just. And then she goes, wait, don't I know you from something? He goes, yeah, probably. You were on that TV show. Yeah, I was. Who's the boss?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm 39 years old. He goes, who's the boss? I was on the Manning. Because it's the first time he's been defensive about the show.
Right.
Because usually it's like, oh, yeah, I was on the Manny.
Yep.
But now he's like, hey, I wasn't on Who's the Boss. And then Nikki comes out of the office. And she's like, hey, you're the guy that threw a chair at me. He goes, hey, don't flatter yourself. Exactly. I was just throwing a chair.
Exactly.
And Kevin meets up with his uncle in the bar and basically says, look, I came out. I was sober. And then I met you. And then I drank. And I need to be sober for me. And so, because he doesn't let Nikki drink. And then he, like, pays for it. And he's like, come on, I'm going to a meeting. You're coming with me right now. Get off the stool. And I almost feel like Nikki looks at him like, that's my brother.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got that big feeling like, this is my older brother Jack yelling at me right now.
Yep.
So Nikki goes with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to a meeting. And sure enough, Cassidy's there.
And he's like, of all the AA meetings, she's like, really, you're going to sit right next to me? Nope, I'm going to sit over here.
Yeah. And Nikki's like, I'm just here for the salty snacks. This alcohol does that to me or something.
Yeah.
And so Kevin starts doing one of his kind of a typical woe is me Kevin stories, which you've come to learn. But I actually almost can relate to what he's saying in this one, because he's not saying, woe is me, I'm the rich movie star and this and that. He's basically saying, like, I don't fuck to do with my life. Like, what am I even living for? Like, what?
Why am I staying sober?
Right. Yeah. Why am I even staying sober? Like, I, you know. And it was actually, I thought it was good, but then
he said that he broke up with an amazing woman. He turned down an amazing movie.
Yeah.
Also, that he could stay sober. He's like, why? So that basically, I can be what, a 50-year-old sober guy. You know, he's talking about like
doing
what
AARP am I going to look forward to? Meetings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing AARP commercials. Guy. Yeah.
And he makes some just – it was a basic joke.
Yeah.
You know, about how, like, being an old guy and having diapers? Like, am I basically staying sober so that I can have clean pants so that I don't shit myself or something like that?
Yeah.
It was something completely stupid. And Cassidy just, like, loses her mind laughing. She, yeah. like, just starts bursting out laughing, which gets him laughing, which gets Nikki laughing, but nobody else laughs.
Yeah, the three of them are laughing, and they intercut their laughter with the laughter of the family watching Arsenio Hall.
Yes.
Which I thought was funny. And then the lady at the meeting, you need to be respectful. The three of you, I'm going to ask you to leave.
And they all get kicked out?
Yeah. It was good.
It was a good bounding moment. Kate and Toby finally have their come to Jesus moment, basically.
Well, yeah.
The restaurant was rough. Basically, Toby's like, hey, you're seating us under an air vent, and that really makes lobster bisque taste bad. Could we sit somewhere else? And the woman's like, those are all reserved seats. And the clients that he's trying to woo were like, oh, we're not going to eat bisque. And he's like, I wanted to eat bisque.
Yeah.
And Kate's like, no, actually, I'm too fat for the booth. I won't fit in there. And yeah. he's trying to be nice. But, you know, I should come with a warning that basically says uncomfortable things. So they find him a table. And
well, but then the waitress is like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. All right. I'm a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have booth issues sometimes, too, depending on the restaurant I go to.
Yep.
Sometimes it just doesn't work for me. Sometimes it does, you know? At the same time, though, I'm not going to squeeze in because fuck that.
Right.
So I get it. That fucking, okay, I'm not trying. Kate's a very large woman.
Yes.
Okay? Like, she is very large.
Yep.
And I almost feel like they put a fat suit on her this year to make her look even bigger than she is.
Because she's supposed to be.
She put on weight after the baby. She put on baby weight. Then she put on stress eating after that.
Yep.
And so I feel like, because like, I just, she looks way bigger this year than she did the last couple of years. But just in her stomach area. There's no way that hostess saw her and thought, booth girl. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, as a hostess at a restaurant, you just can't, yeah, no. She totally would have seen her.
I agree.
It's like if you go to the airline and you go to get a plane ticket, they're not going to go, oh, geez, that person's a sumo wrestler. They probably shouldn't sit in one seat.
Let's put them in the middle seat.
But you know what I mean, though? Right. Like, it's one of those things. She definitely should have seen her and been like, yeah, that's a table person right there, not a yep. booth person right there.
But Kate basically confronts Toby in a nice way, but yeah. she's like, take off your shirt. And he takes it off. She's like, you're jacked. And he's like, look, I got to confess.
Yeah.
I've been doing CrossFit because I had a heart attack at 37 and I don't want my son to find out that his dad died changing his diaper or bending over to pick him up. He's like, so I want to be in better shape. And Kate's like, and his mom's okay to die with that. And he's like, you've been under stress. I didn't want to like burden you by saying, hey, you should stop eating so much junk food. Like he made a good point. You know, she is her own person.
Right.
He can't be like, honey, you need to stop eating so much.
Well, because, like, she needs to do it for her. For what motivates her properly.
Mm-hmm.
Not for, because Toby said so.
Right.
And because, and see, I get that. Because you have, like, Kate's kind of jealous that Toby found the willpower to do what he needed to do.
Yep.
Is what it comes down to. I completely understand and partially relate to that.
Yep.
But, yeah. Yeah.
So one thing that was, it was very innocuous, but I really appreciated it, was the new neighbor.
I love the new neighbor.
Timothy Osmondson, which I didn't even recognize him at first, but I was like, look at that. So Kate's first interaction with him was this crotchety old man who walks over and goes, tell your husband to stop parking on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And she's trying to be nice. She's like, oh, sorry, we've got a moving unit and we've been trying to unload it and blah, blah, blah. And she gives him this whole sob story and he goes, do it. Tell him to stop parking there or I'm going to have the car towed.
Yeah, she's park like, on the street or I'm going to have it towed.
She's like, wow, what an asshole. So she's sitting out there having a breakdown after finding out that Toby's been doing all this stuff. And he comes over to her and he goes, I told you to tell your husband to stop parking on the sidewalk. And she's like, not today, dude, not today. And she's like, I found out that he'd been sneaking off and working out, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, kind of opens up to him.
Yeah.
And you think at first that he's just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Because he kind of gets quiet and he goes,
oh.
I had a stroke 2 years ago. I lost the use of everything. I had to relearn everything. I had to relearn to walk. I had to relearn to tie my shoes. I had to relearn how to chew my food. It has been a slow uphill battle the entire time. And right now.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Not done.
Yeah, not done. He's like, I have one goal right now, and that is to walk 1 mile.
His wife died.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And then my wife died.
Yep. Yeah. He's like, so I have one goal, and that's to walk 1 mile, which I can do by walking around the block like one time or four times or whatever. He goes, but when your husband parks on the sidewalk, I can't do that. So it is interrupting my ability to do what I have set out to do.
Yeah.
If he does it again tomorrow, I'm keying his car.
This hand still works.
That's right. And he starts to walk off and he goes, this is me stomping away angrily. Blink and you'll miss it. And he's just, he's got a cane and he's stomping along so slowly.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So basically they're going to become walking buddies.
Yeah, the next day she goes out with the baby and the stroller and the dog and he's walking and she just kind of cozies up next to him, and she just goes, I walk slow, too.
Yeah.
And he goes, huh. And they just start walking, and then he goes, something like, what kind of gang are we?
Yeah. I think I'm going to like his character.
Oh, yeah, I liked him. Because you're right. At first, he's the crotchety old man, but then when he does his story, this show has excellent writing. We both appreciate that, and so that's what helps with us. But
and that's the second time in our podcast episode today that we've discussed how this show can subvert expectations.
Yeah.
You know, you think Miguel is a scumbag. He's actually one of the best guys on the show.
Yeah.
You think that this guy's just a crotchety old asshole. Turns out he was dealt a raw hand and he's doing the best that he can, but God damn it, he just wants to walk around the block and your husband is parking the car on the sidewalk. Yep.
Blacklist.
Blacklist. You had two episodes to catch up on.
Where are we at? God, an hour and 40 minutes already. I think we just spent 20 minutes talking about This Is Us, probably. Yeah, I watched the first two episodes, which they were a part one and a part two.
Yeah.
The blacklister was Lewis T. Steinhill, which is whatever it is, anagram, if you will, or however they the word it, but for illusionist.
Yep.
So basically, Red was abducted by Katarina. And
which is how we left it last season.
Yep. And so this season, he wakes up in a hospital in Paris, and
he's paralyzed. Allegedly. They tell him he was, in a car accident, and that he's now paralyzed, and he won't be able to walk again, and they've got to hold him in place so that his spine can be worked on. They got all those, foam bricks around him.
Yeah, and they have to raise him up and down so he doesn't get a pulmonary embolism. But the police are there, and they need to speak to him to find out what happened, who got him, what's going on. And at the same time, Denby's trying to find Red, because Red's been missing for 6 days or whatever it is.
Yep.
And I don't know, do you want a long and the short this one?
Just long and short it, yeah.
Okay, basically this is all a big con. Katrina Rostova, has hired this guy, this Lewis T. Steinhill, the illusionist guy, to run this con on Red to try to find out what he knows. Because basically, and I don't know if this is true or not, but basically with Wrestler and Elizabeth digging around for Katarina, it stir up some things, and now people are looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to know who's looking for her and how they plan to get her and this and that, and she thinks Red has the information. Now, I don't know if I missed something in the last 6 years, but she seems unnecessarily angry with him.
Mm.
Like that she wronged him somehow.
Yeah.
Which
I think we're going to get more as time goes on. But yeah, she does, there is some severe animosity here.
Like, she's pissed off at her dad, too, Dom.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't understand why. She's the one that kind of betrayed her country, because that's what she did.
Yep.
You know, got Reddington killed.
Yep.
The real Raymond Reddington killed after setting him up to take the fall for what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to gain access to his money that he didn't even know he had, but that she had set up and everything in his name and this and that, she convinced her friend to have plastic surgery to look like Raymond Reddington, to take over his life so then she could get the money.
Right.
And then deserted him and her own daughter to go on the run, to go hiding out,
mm-hmm.
protect herself. And she's the one that's mad at them. And she's mad at Reddington. And so, you know what, I didn't understand that part.
Yeah.
It was really, as I'm watching these two episodes this morning, because I watched them this morning, it was confusing to me.
Everything that we've dealt with her up until this point has all been told from Red's point of view.
Right.
And most of the focus of this show has been on Reddington and Elizabeth. Right. And now we're bringing her in, and it just, it does. It feels a little bit messy.
Yeah.
And indecipherable.
Yeah. So in the hospital, Red steals a phone from one of the nurses or whatever, and it's locked and he can't get into it, but he notices that this guy really likes the Washington Nationals for some reason, which seems odd.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's looking outside, and it's not the real outside. It's fake, and he can tell because of the time of day and the reflection of the sun, I'm assuming.
Yep.
So he's like, huh, that's not real. And then so the nurse comes in, and essentially after basically he finds out that he's being held. He's not really paralyzed. They're giving him an epidural to make his legs numb. Mm-hmm. She has to come in every 4 hours to readminister the epidural or else. This nurse, I can't think of what, I don't know what her real name is in the end, but basically, because we see her through these two episodes, she, by force, he forces her to help him, call in the detective that's interrogating him. She tries to get a gun, because he takes the camera, the clock, and reflects the light, the fake sunlight onto the camera so they can't see it.
Yep.
And then gets her to turn the music up, and that's when he puts all this into play, and he escapes. But he gets caught before he gets out of there. And then, in the meantime, the FBI is trying to find him, and they get lied to. They go to the French embassy, and they get headed off at the pass of the French embassy, and long short, they figure out that this is all a ruse. They figure out that he's in Washington, that he's in Annapolis, and they go to find him. Of course, they get there after he's already been recaptured and taken to another location. And we're there. Katarina then starts to drain all the blood out of him.
Because why not?
Right. Because she's are your secrets worth dying? Because basically she doesn't want to hurt him. She doesn't, but she knows she has to save herself or some shit. There's some weird twisted thinking of self-preservation, I guess. So the long and the short of it, the nurse then proceeds to help him escape because he's like, I can tell you're not really a killer. And so she helps him escape. She has to shoot a guy, of course. They stop. She takes the tracking chip out of his neck. I mean, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, this is still all a setup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's still working for Katarina. Because she's like, I found out where Dom is. And so Reddington's now focused on trying to get to Dom. And I'm like, duh. You're leading them to him.
Right.
So they get to Dom, this and that. And then Demby shows up. And they get platelets and everything back into Red. Because he's got his own blood stash that Demby brings to him. So they get blood back in him, get his strength back, this and that. And then Denby's like gives the girl a business card. The nurse is like, you need to go, blah, blah, blah. Red will help you out. Don't worry. He'll take care of you. He'll protect you because, you know, this person's probably going to come for you.
Right.
Then she goes back in and is like, look, all right. So this whole thing was a ruse. It was really elaborate, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm a field medic. That's not even my name. Yes, I got set up to do this, but that's because they told me you were a bad guy, but you don't seem like a bad guy.
Right.
So for whatever reason.
But then she follows it up quickly with, and I have terrible taste in men, or yeah, like, yes, I always make the bad decisions with men.
So she throws her hat in with Reddington because for whatever reason, she was, you know, on the other side this whole time. And so Reddington's like, all right, cool. You're with us.
Yep.
Because A, I get her need a gun. I need you. And you're being honest with us right now. Instead of getting out of here and escaping and saving yourself, you're now, you know, set. Because she legitimately, until that point, was scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
Reddington thought she was going to be in danger and all this other stuff, but she had done exactly what she was told, so she was good to go.
Right.
Now she made this choice. So, of course, Katarina shows up. There's a shootout. Dom gets shot in the chest. A bunch of other people die. And then, you know, Elizabeth and company show up, and Katarina's gotten out of there in the interim, so she's fled. They get Dom to the doctors, blah, blah, blah. Wrestler and Elizabeth tell the other two members on the team that who Reddington really is. Yeah, that whole story.
They kind of, like, they spill that to everybody. They're like, oh, by the way, here's everything in the backstory.
It's just the four of them that know, the four main guys.
Right.
And Elizabeth, but we finally get to hear Elizabeth reasoning as to why. She's like, all right, you know what? There's this guy who I'm, you know, not his child, but yet he's dedicated his life to me,
mm-hmm.
to protecting me.
Yep.
I don't know. Who else do you know that would do something like that? Reddington has a talk with the nurse girl, and actually it makes you think he's going to kill her, but he doesn't. Instead, he's like, you owe me. You work for me now.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, he flat out says to her, I don't know what to do with you, but.
Yeah. Yep.
And she goes, why did the FBI not arrest you? Because she's still asking him questions. It makes me think maybe she's working for the other side. But that guy killed himself. The illusionist.
But he didn't.
Well, that until we think, but it's not until after that you realize it didn't. Because when they run the second raid on the second place they're holding Reddington, the illusionist guy allegedly kills himself inside the office. They call the ME's office, who then show up and take his body away. But nope, that's all part of his escape plan. Because honestly, it would make sense he would have an escape plan. If he's that good at what he does,
right.
He would have an escape plan. So they take his body away, and he had a cool thing on his neck, apparently, that prevented him from feeling a pulse, I would assume. And, of course, he had a fake bullet shot in the head, and blood splattered everywhere, and yada yada. So it was pretty cool. So he's still around. He's not off the list anymore. And I like the fact when she explains everything to Reddington, the whole plan and everything, his response is, you'll have to give me his contact information so I can put him on retainer.
I loved, too, that they said that that the crime scene that was cleaned up, yeah. that the entire operation was handled by Special Agent Gerald Host.
Ghost. Yeah.
G-Host.
And then the ending,
yep.
which is, of course, you know, Elizabeth and Agnes going to leave to go to school and work or whatever, and they meet the new neighbor, who is Katerina. Which I think she would, I would assume she would have gone on the run because maybe Reddington's going to show up at her apartment once in a while.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think this is the last season that this show's on.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
I would assume if this was going to be the last, oh, you think it, okay, it hasn't been officially announced.
Right, no. I just think that this is the last one that, yeah.
Still a good show. Yeah. Oh, are you gonna talk about Adam ruins himself?
Yeah, I'll go over a few things here real quick. Basically, it, like I said, they kept saying this was the finale.
Yeah.
But I think it's just season finale. He was on a late night show, you know, fake late night show with I hate that guy. So I'm not gonna remember his name anyway.
David Letterman?
No. It was Pete something. It was a fake late night show, and. Then he started talking to himself, so they had two versions of him talking, and he was basically talking about his inner demons. The first part of it was he was talking about all the facts that you present in your show are filtered through your own cognitive biases, which we all know that. It's kind of what I've talked about with documentaries. Everything that they present is filtered through their stuff. So it's hard to know if you're actually learning the truth or you're learning somebody else's version of the truth.
Right.
Which is fair enough. It's called my side bias.
Yep.
So they gave the example that when he was talking about his Adam ruined sex, he talked about circumcision. And they were like, you know, at the end of the day, your whole thing was that circumcision is unnecessary. It's dirty, blah, blah, blah. They said, but if you were somebody who had been circumcised, your conclusion might have been different. You know, oh, it's great. It's fun. It's blah, 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 blah. You know, it's so again, it's. You know, the information that you're presenting to people is going to be based on what you want to believe yourself. Confirmation bias, they went into that, which is when you seek out information that supports your own beliefs, your own ideas. You know, if they use the circumcision thing again, he was like, you know, I want you to find all the information that you can about why circumcision is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find it. If you look for information on something that supports your beliefs, you can find it. And that only strengthens your beliefs because then that's what you're looking for. Basically talked about how he himself only learns a little bit about a topic. It's his writers and his researchers that thoroughly vet it and make sure that it's good. And then he's the talking head that comes on there.
Kind of makes sense. He's still presenting the information. But.
Yep. It's a thing known as the Dunning-Kruger effect. And I thought this was one of those old psychological things. Apparently, this is only within the past 20 years, and they actually had Dr. Dunning come out as one of the guests of the show and talk about it. And basically, it's they said, you know, people who are the worst at their jobs think they're the best. You literally don't know what you don't know. So you think, I'm doing a great job. I'm doing a great job. And you're convincing yourself of that, but you really don't, because you're just going off what you have in front of you.
I was reading about that in one of my classes I was just taking for my leadership classes. Like, that came up, and it had to deal with dealing with different employees or leaders or this, that, whatever. So they went into the Dunning-Kruger effect, and I'm reading, and I'm going, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yes.
It was like the time, I'm not going to mention names, but, like, when I was at Augusta Police, there's this dispatcher, like, was not very good at all. And then when asked to rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 10, they responded a 7. And I almost fell out of my chair, because I'm just like, I would call myself maybe a 7 or an 8. If you're a 7, I'm like a fucking 1,000, because like, it was just one of those things. I'm like, that's what that is.
Yep.
But yeah. Yeah.
They basically, they were saying that, you know, in order to combat that, you have to always consider all the options. Don't just go with your first instinct. But they said that the biases can actually be good, because it's your brain creating and making shortcuts so that you don't have to take so long to process information. You know, it's almost like stereotypes, where you're just like, you go to it. But they talked about when you mold facts into an interesting narrative, you know, you try to create a story around it. On the one hand, it's really good, because that's how most of us remember information, is based around a story of how it works. Mm-hmm. But when you actually mold it into a narrative, you get further from reality, because you're taking out the factual part of it in favor of the story aspect of it. They gave a good example about how, like, he's done different shows that show Teddy Roosevelt. And, like, on one show, he's a hero. On one show, he's a miserly asshole. On another show, he's this. You know, because you're doing it to fit the story at the time. And the fact is, people are complex, so they can be all of those things at once. When a story is too compelling, people can mistake it for the truth, which is why comedy skits can be harmful.
Yep.
The fake news, I guess you'd call it.
An old, old, old Saturday Night Live skit, which was John Goodman was the host because he had Elvis in it, but it was Natalie Cole sings with her father's dead friends. And one of them was like, he goes, Tammy Wynette. And then they show Tammy Wynette, and then she goes, I'm not dead. And then they go, I am not dead. This is how rumors get started. And then she starts singing this side, and then he goes, cut it out, bitch. Like, that one stuck with me all these years.
Absolutely. That was the best. One of the examples that they gave was the tulip crash in like 1917 that destroyed the Dutch economy, you know, where everybody bought tulips, raised tulips. They were like, yes, let's do it. And they became overvalued, oversaturated, and everybody lost their jobs, lost their homes. It didn't happen that way at all. It was actually a blip on the radar. It was just like, oh, wow, this kind of sucks. But the more sensationalized version of that, that was put out by people who at the time wanted a grabbing, catching story.
Yep.
That was what people clung to, because it's more fun to tell that story than a, oh yeah, people bought a lot of tulips and, you know, it didn't work out so well, the end. So because that story was so compelling, it's what more people told over and over again, to the point where now there are a lot of people out there who believe that it is the truth.
That makes sense.
And unfortunately, that's where you have the problems, where you can, you know, you've got the truth on one hand, you've got a compelling story on the other, and it can actually harm your cases and get entire generations of people thinking that something happened when it didn't really. Unlike flat earth theory, which is completely different.
I mean, it's not flat.
Yeah. Then they talked about how, you know, his show is a TV show and it's all about the advertisers. It's to sell ad space and stuff like that. And he, again, he's talking to himself. So there's like the one version of Adam that's saying, you know, you're just selling out. And the other one is going, no, I'm trying to do this. So they talked about how advertising is not, the goal of advertising is not to sell you something, which most people think that it is. It's to actually slowly, subtly influence you towards a name brand or a product brand or something like that. Hold on. Sorry, I lost my place. Okay. Effective conditioning is what they use. Putting an ad next to something that you already have positive feelings for, so that you transfer those feelings to a product. You know, a small kid playing in the grass, and then it's a thing for Budweiser. You know, puppies playing around, and you see a laundry detergent. You think, oh, it's soft like a puppy soft fur. Oh, that's so good.
Well, it's like they always say, the packaging for candy cigarettes resembles that of actual cigarettes. So you get conditioned as you're younger when you buy your candy cigarettes. That's what you're going to, you know.
Yep. Exactly. Repetition in advertising is because the more you see and hear something, the more you tend to like it. It's sad, but you and I were just talking about this before the podcast with the mermaid effect.
Yes.
You know, the more you see somebody, the more you're like, I guess they're actually kind of attractive.
Yep.
Oh, they're not that bad.
Yep.
Priming, showing you specific behavior in relation to a product in order to condition us to emulate it.
Yep.
These are all just different things that commercials do. They said the ads work even better on kids under 8 because they don't know what commercials are. So they assume that whatever they're seeing on TV is the truth.
Okay. Wesley knows what commercials are. It's hilarious. Yeah. He gets pissed when they pop up during his YouTube videos. And he's like, ah, commercial. And he's just like, he's waiting. And he's like, push the button, push it. So he hits skip ad because he knows that that's not his show.
Right.
It's hilarious. So you have to skip the ad. And he's like, all right. And then sometimes you can't skip him, and he gets angry, and it's like, well, say you just have to be patient and wait.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And they kind of topped it all off with talking about how there have been certain parts of his show that have gotten cut because they bowed down to advertisers, you know, and they gave examples.
Really?
And that was what was really interesting, because he's actually saying this in front of everybody. So one of them was eHarmony, when Adam Ruins Dating. He had a lot of good material, a lot of jokes about eHarmony and their parent company Match and stuff like that. And they had to cut a lot of them because basically the network execs were like, look, these are big advertisers. We can't alienate them. And he's like, all right, I guess so. So he had to compromise for that. When he was doing Adam Ruins Football, he wanted to take down Gatorade because, you know.
That ain't happening.
Well, that's the thing, is they were like, look, can't you find something that, like, don't other power drinks out there do the same? And he's like, well, I guess, yeah, there's you know, Powerade, there's other things that are. So they had to kind of lump it all into one thing instead of just going after Gatorade. And then the biggest one was he actually had a whole show dedicated to things around how the NCAA doesn't pay its athletes, how it's a criminal type thing, and that the history is shocking and frightening to think about, how they don't pay any of their athletes and they use them like slaves and blah, blah, blah. And the network was like, no, we can't do that. We run NCAA games on this network. We can't do that. And he had to actually pull the whole episode because they would have lost revenue dollars. So basically saying, you know, are you really a person of integrity, or are you bowing down?
He really did ruin himself.
He did. He did. It was a good episode. It was good stuff, but it reminded me of that recent thing with the NBA and China, everything that's going on with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I liked it. I really do hope this was only a season finale and not a series finale.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's it for my shows.
So we'll save Mr. Robot because we're going to spoil that.
Yes.
Did you watch any movies?
I watched one movie.
What'd you watch?
I went to the theater and I watched Jexy.
How was it? That just came out, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Just came out. It was short. That's one thing that I really noticed about it. It was like an hour and 24 minutes, but it felt even shorter than that. You think that the basic premise of it is that phones are enslaving us.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of a – you look at the trailers and it's all jokes about that. More than that, though, it wasn't even as much about you need to put your phone down. You know, because there are a few places where, like, you see him every day walking across the street staring at his phone. Everybody's staring at the phone. It's what people do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at one point he, like, stops and looks up and sees the bridge because he's in San Francisco. And he's like, wow, it's a beautiful world. And so there's that kind of thing. But more than that, it was something that I found very relatable, which was getting out of your comfort zone, doing stuff. This was a guy who he was very happy just living at home. Having his phone bring him all the information he could ever want, doing things like DoorDash, Netflix, Hulu, and then going to work every day at his shitty job and, you know, not trying to better his life in any way. Just like, well, this is what I am. This is where I'm at. And trying to break out of that and do some things that frighten you and do some things that you wouldn't normally do to experience life more.
Right. I get that.
I liked it. It was good. It was short. I don't need to rush out and see it again.
Okay.
But I'll probably see it again when it comes out on home video.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
I watched Into the Tall Grass, the Netflix original movie built based on a Stephen King story.
Mm-hmm.
It's only been out for a little while, so I don't want to ruin it, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah.
It does that thing, though, that Stephen King thing, where it starts out like a, almost like a pure horror story type mm-hmm. thing, or, you know, thriller, like what's going on, supernaturally thing. And then by the end, it's got that really kind of over-convoluted, like, okay. But it's not... Dreamcatcher's the big one for me. I really enjoyed the first half of the movie, and then by the end with Dennis, and he's like, I was just like, what the fuck is this? What am I watching? You know? So it wasn't to that extreme, but I was just kind of like, all right, that's pretty awkwardly far, but no, I enjoyed it. It's worth a watch.
Okay.
I didn't have any trailers.
I sent you a couple.
Yep.
Portals.
Looks good.
Looks good. Looks a little freaky. They didn't give us enough to go on.
No.
Daybreak, the one about the apocalypse that's coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
That looks great.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yep. Slacker and
yeah.
The adults all basically become zombies in some way, shape, or form. And then I don't know why, but Robert Downey Jr. is going to be playing Dr. Doolittle.
I hadn't heard anything about this.
Me either.
I watched the trailer and I thought this would be a fun movie that like my two youngest kids will love to watch.
Yep.
I'm not real convinced or sold on his accent.
No, his accent's weird.
It's awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know what nationality it's supposed to be, but it's just weird.
Something odd. So yeah, those were my trailers.
I got a little bit of news.
Yep.
All my news is based on Crisis on Infinite Earth, so I have nothing else. So the Tim Burton Batman, so I like to call it Batman 1989.
Yep.
Is apparently going to be is referenced a couple of times in the upcoming Crisis. Apparently, according to leaked photos, there's a reference there with a newspaper showing Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne, and the headline is that Bruce Wayne is going to marry Selina Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Robert Wool is apparently coming back as his character Alexander Knox from the 1989 Batman flick.
That was a deep dig.
Yeah, that was a hugely deep dig. Also. News broke that Tom Ellis is going to be appearing as Lucas Morningstar in
Lucifer.
Lucifer. I said Luke. I put down Lucifer as Lucifer Morningstar in the crossover as well. So that's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is huge. And
then, of course, it's like, well, is he going to have something to do with like Constantine and maybe like an upcoming series or maybe Constantine or you know what I mean? It's just all this stuff.
Which is weird because Lucifer was always a Fox show that then moved to Netflix.
Yes.
So it's never touched the CW. But no. I know that comics wise, they're in the same universe.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool, though, that they were able to get him and his character.
Yeah.
And then another big rumor, which I don't know if this is just an actual rumor, if it's a real thing or whatnot, but Justin Hartley is returning as to play Oliver Queen from the Smallville universe, that version of Arrow, which people have been wanting.
And yeah.
He still looks good.
I mean, if they're throwing everything at him at the Crisis, they may as well.
And we had talked, we had messages to each other like, okay, I love it all. I think it's fantastic. You know, there's been some set photos that have come out, like Tom Cavanagh's in a costume of some kind.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a Martian Manhunter costume.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. There's Burt Ward. Saw a picture of him with like a Robin Colors sweater on. So that's kind of cool, you know,
yep.
and everything. But then I mentioned to you, like, are they getting to the point of overkill? And you said, I don't know.
I said, I think that they're going in that direction. Like, they're not there yet, but it is – my excitement at this point has gone from every time something new comes up from going, yeah, to going, great.
Huh. Like, because it's like – this is five episodes, which is 5 hours, but it's not really 5 hours. You know, it's more like 3 hours. Wait, 45 minutes of an episode, so take away an hour and – 15 minutes. So, you know, it's like, yeah. It's like 3 hours and 45 minutes of actual program, which is a long time. That's a big fucking movie.
Yeah.
But to tell the story they want to tell with all the existing world characters that they're putting in there, plus all these other characters they're bringing in, I mean, excited about it. I'm excited to see how it's going to go. But is it going to get to the point where Burt Ward's involvement is he's literally walking his dog and he waves at somebody and that's it? That's how Burt Ward's in it? I mean, like, Are these going to be glorified cameos?
That's what it feels like.
Are they going to be actually be involved in some sort of story?
Or like that newspaper article picture that we saw, you know, Bruce Wayne marries Selina Kyle.
Right.
Is it just going to be that kind of thing? Like a background
I
filler?
I mean, yes, they could get everybody a few minutes of screen time and everything and tell the story. I don't want to overthink it because I'm excited about it and I just want to watch it.
Right.
However, I did see a new rumor pop up today. I hadn't messaged it to you yet because I knew we were going to be recording this today, but rumor has it, Linda Carter is going to be returning as Wonder Woman.
She should. They've already had her on Supergirl as president, so.
But yeah, she could be Diana, you know, so yeah.
Nice. So. I just have a couple of pieces of news.
Sure.
I think I had mentioned this before, whether it was you and I talking or the last time, but they've announced that Family Guy and American Dad will not be on Disney Plus.
Really?
Even though they're Fox shows that Disney now owns. That's too bad. Simpsons will be there, but not Family Guy or American Dad.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
Is it? No, it can't be the adult content.
No. Probably not family friendly, and they rip on Disney a number of times.
They have ripped on Disney.
That's more than The Simpsons.
A lot. Yeah, The Simpsons have as well.
Alan Tudyk is coming to The Rookie.
No.
As a crime scene cleaner.
Woohoo!
To teach Nolan about the arts of cleaning a crime scene.
Yes!
This was Nathan Fillion also just tweeted, but Instagram, I follow him. And he was putting up a bunch of pictures that the two detectives that he worked with on Castle just did guest stars.
Nice.
Did you know? Okay, so Ryan, you remember Detective Ryan?
Sure.
He is in real life in a relationship with, I don't remember her name, but season one of Scrubs. There was that caseworker that was in the MRI machine and JD wanted to date her, but he hadn't seen her.
Oh, you never saw her face.
And then it turned out she had a pill addiction. You remember her?
Yes, I remember her.
She, in real life, is dating Detective Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. She was on the show, too, I guess. The original voice cast of Animaniacs made a surprise announcement that they're coming back for a reboot on Hulu.
Okay.
I'm excited. I loved Animaniacs.
All right, hold on. This is a Warner Brothers property. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers is coming out with their own fucking network show. Mm-hmm. Network.
Yep. I don't know why, but they're doing it.
Okay, it's going to be on Hulu, though.
Yep.
Not. Okay.
And then this was one of the weirdest, but
I mean,
probably
they lived in a Warner Brothers water tower on the Warner Brothers lot.
They were the Warner Brothers and sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yakko, Wakko, and Dot.
Yep.
So this was the weirdest, but also kind of the coolest news that I saw this week.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of Ballerina? It's going to be a spinoff of John Wick. Based on the ballerina who was on stage in John Wick 3 that, you know, Angelica Houston's character was telling her, keep going, keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, she's getting her own spinoff. She's going to be doing assassin-type stuff, John Wick-type stuff. But, like, what we've seen of John Wick is just him trying to survive. She's going to be an actual, like, Jason Bourne type, from what I understand.
Oh, wait, so it's Black Widow?
I believe so, yeah.
It's kind of Black Widow.
But in the John Wick world, there'll be lots of death and lots of creative kills and lots of action and a flexible dancer.
All right, I'll watch it.
Yep. I will definitely check this one out.
I'll watch it.
Because I've had nothing but praise for the John Wick universe so far.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a big fan.
Yep.
Is that it?
Ballerina focuses on a young female assassin who seeks revenge against the people who killed her family. Pictures on a fast track with a script by Shay Hayton. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, he helped write John Wick Chapter 3.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Then.
Yep. So there. That's what I got. That's my show for the week.
Okay. Mr. Robot?
Mr. Robot.
If you don't want spoilers, we'll talk to you next week.
That's right.
If you want to listen to spoilers, talking for a few more minutes.
Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot.
So we watched this together.
Yes. We completely forgot to talk about Dom last week.
Yes.
In her first episode and what was going on. So we should really rehash that.
Yes. Yeah, because I realized that as I was uploading last week's episode. So what was going on with Dom last week?
Oh, she moved in with her mother.
Yep.
She was exceptionally paranoid.
Yep. losing her mind.
Yep. Her mother's new friend is a girl named Janice, who, as we find out, is a taxidermist and works for the Dark Army as a handler and going to become Dom's handler. Mm-hmm. And basically, he's like, you didn't do what we're saying. We're going to kill your mom. I'd hate to kill her. She's a nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dom kind of had the right to be paranoid because she was being watched, like she thought. And then they played their hand, and so it was decided with this episode that Dom needs to go back to work.
Yep. Well, yeah, the taxidermist basically told her that. She's like, you're going to go in, and you're going to throw them off the trail of this investigation into that agent.
So, so this episode, episode two, opens with a montage that and who's doing the narration? I know it's Angela's dad, but I can't think of his name.
I can't think of his name either.
But basically, it's this montage of Zhang or White Rose. Mm-hmm. And you really need to go watch this if you haven't watched it. I mean, even if you don't like the show, just go find this and watch it, because it really breaks down how we've become as a society, how we've become so dependent on electronics and social media and the internet and just everything.
How America was the guinea pig, and basically saying that it was, how did he put it? It was something like this was a coup.
Yeah.
The greatest subjugation experiment of all time, and we actually lined up to volunteer for it.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was really cool. It was really crazy, though.
Philip Price.
Yeah, so Price goes through this whole thing with Elliot. Well, as it turns out, he's explaining to Elliot how Zhang rose to power as White Rose, and became the leader that he is, and everything else involved with it, and it basically catches us up to, this is where we're at. This is where we are. And he's like,
created a group known as
Deus.
The Deus Group.
The Deus Group, which every time I see it, it's spelled like Deuce, but the E and the U are reversed, I realize. But and basically, this is how it's been going on for decades, and Zhang's ultimate plan is finally about to come to fruition. But he never says this is why Angela was killed, but it's kind of part of the reason why Angela was killed. It's part of the reason why, you know, E-Corp is what it is, and how it was able to survive after the attack from the F-Society, and on and on and on. And so Elliot's like, well, we need to take her down. We need to take her down. We need to figure out how to do this. We need to get to their funds somehow. And do you know anyone inside that can get us those accounts? Do you know anyone that can get us this information? And he's basically like, Susan Jacobs. But she's been missing for months, and no one knows where she is. Let's just fast forward to the end of the episode. We already know what happened to her. She's dead.
Yeah.
Because
Darlene and the F-Society people
took
over her smart house in season two while Elliot was in jail.
And Susan Day was supposed to be out of town, and she came home early, and Darlene accidentally, on purpose, killed her. And then her last transaction from her e-coin account, or whatever it is, was her paying for her own disposal at this animal vet clinic where they cremate bodies and stuff.
Because they have been using that place to get rid of, like, their hard drives and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then,
Yeah. So Elliot's plan is centered around trying to find where Susan Jacobs is and everything to get the information from her. And of course now he won't be able to because she's dead.
Yep.
Dom goes and talks to her boss and basically, you know, delivers the message that, the reason why this guy's missing is I think he was a double agent. She's really nervous at first. And we think that she's going to talk about, you know, the Dark Army or White Rose or Deus or whatever. But instead, she's like, he was working for a drug cartel. And then Janice calls her and is like, well, how'd it go? She's like, I'm pretty sure that you're pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, you know, everything went good.
99.9% sure.
Yeah, that everything's fine and everything's going to be good. And Janice's like, okay. And then she goes and kills the agent that Dom talked to. Makes it look like a suicide, and sends her a text that says, 99.9% isn't good enough. Let's keep it 100. And even uses the 100 emoji. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's really fucked up. So what else happened?
Elliot finds out from Darlene that their mom died.
Yep.
And they have to go to the nursing home where she was at and take care of her stuff. And these two couldn't care less. You know, they basically, they start off with, you know, this woman's like, oh, she was so great and you must have loved her. And they're like, yeah, okay. You could just donate all of her stuff. And the woman's like, staff is not allowed to touch any belongings to anybody. You're going to have to box them up, and you could put sticky notes on them for what you wish for us to do, but we can't.
Yeah.
And they're like, ugh. And then they go to the funeral parlor director, and Elliot just like walks in off screen. Oh,
God. That was hilarious because Darlene is sitting there tormented, looking, what am I supposed to do? We weren't really close. And she just pours her heart out about how torn and just upset she is, but she doesn't know what to do or how to handle this or how do you make these decisions. And the guy's just staring at her deadpan.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he deals with this stuff all the time. He doesn't care. It's much the same way that as a dispatcher, you kind of grow thick skin to that kind of stuff.
Right.
So he's just sitting there. And then Elliot walks in. He's on his phone typing something. And he just looks up and goes, cremation, cardboard casket, cheapest urn. Let's go. We got to do stuff. But in and amongst the possessions, Darlene discovers that mom had a safe deposit box.
Yeah.
And so she wants to see what was in there. And Elliot's like, I don't care. It's not going to change anything about the past. And so Darlene convinces him to go down to the bank. The bank owner says she lapsed payments 2 years ago. And so bank policy is that after 120-day grace period, we get rid of the contents. So it's gone. And Darlene kind of loses her mind at that point. And then they listen to this old Walkman.
They had found in their mother's room.
And she's like, why are you over this? And he's like, I'm not. He goes, look inside there. And it's this cassette tape that says Happy Mother's Day. And she's like, why would she have this? This wasn't even meant for her. And he goes, I don't know. Maybe she was lonely and she just wanted to listen to it. So they both listen to it together. And it's all of them young. Young Darlene, young Angela, and young
Elliot.
And they're all singing, you know, Happy Mother's Day. And they're wishing Happy Mother's Day to Angela's mom. We love you. Yeah, we love you too. Yeah, we all love you. And it was a little heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest twists and biggest weird things in this entire episode was that Darlene kind of, she didn't really let it slip, but she was just having a casual conversation with him and talked about, what was his name?
Well, no, because what happened was Darlene was like, I saw that you had, why are you looking into Susan Jacobs? I saw that, you know, on your phone, her image, and you're looking, why are you looking into her? Why are you trying to get into her e-currency account? And he doesn't tell her the whole plan, but he basically says, we need to find her for, you know, her connection to the Dark Army.
Yep.
And that's when Darlene basically tells him, well, you know, we broke into her place, and she doesn't come out and say, I killed her. Mm-hmm. Because he's like, what, you really want me to say it out loud? You haven't figured it out?
Yeah.
And Elliot, of course, at first is upset because that's without her, the plan is kind of mushed. And in the interim,
Philip.
Nope. Oh, yeah. Price. Basically goes to White Rose and says, Aang, and says, look, I'm stepping down to CEO by the end of the year and I'm out of the Deus Group. And he's like, and White Rose is pissed because basically you're going to ruin my plans. You got to wait till we're all done. You know, you got to remember where your loyalties lie, this and that, because to replace you in the Deus Group, we have to get everybody together. And he's just like, I do it. I don't care.
Yep.
Because, like, it's October for us, but on the show, it's like just after Christmas or right before Christmas or whatever.
It's right before Christmas.
I mean, there's like 8 days to the new year or something like that. So White Rose is pissed because getting them all together is Elliot needs that.
Yep.
But he needed Susan Jacobs and then them all together to get his plan. But at least they're going to be all together now, allegedly.
Right.
So that's when Darlene is like,
she says that she's not as scared about that as she is about, and I want to say Vega, but
who I think it's Vega.
Yeah. So basically the drug dealer from season one and season two.
Yeah.
She's like, but I'm more scared about him. And Elliot's like, what do you mean? She's like, yeah, I saw him outside of your place a couple months back. And, you know, he basically said that he was in town and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, why were you keeping this from me? She's like, I told you about that. And he's like, bullshit. So then he has it out with Mr. Robot. And he's like, why wouldn't you tell me this? And he's like, she never told me. And he's like, well, she told one of us because she says she told me. So she told one of us. And if I didn't hear it and you didn't hear it, who the hell did she tell? And then we kind of get it cut away to this
it looks like a boardroom in a big skyscraper, and there's a young boy, the one who plays young Elliot in his mind, spinning in a wheelie chair, spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, annoyingly.
Yeah.
And then his mother walks in, and she's like, you shouldn't be sitting in that chair. That's not your chair. And he's around a round table with four chairs.
He's like, she's like, it's not your turn yet.
Yes. And he goes, well, when will it be? And she goes, well, we're waiting. They're waiting for him to show up. Who? The other one.
Yeah.
So we know that there's at least
the kid immediately gets out of the chair.
Yep. And walks out of the room with her. And the door closes. So we know there's at least one other personality inside him that we haven't met yet.
Yeah.
But as I said to you last night, the way that this show works and the way that Sam Esmail works, this is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Because I foresee us seeing flashbacks or seeing earlier scenes from seasons that we never knew were going on where this guy was driving the car.
It'll be interesting because, like you said last night, if this was any other show, I'd probably be pissed off at this because it's just like, this is lazy writing. Oh, let's just throw someone new in there.
Exactly.
But with this show, the way it is, no, this has probably been the plan from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, we're going to get to see scenes from the past seasons where this guy was driving
around. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. So I think that'll be pretty awesome.
Me too. I'm so looking forward
to it. And I'm looking forward to that. It's a great show.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. All right, speaking of show, that's great. That's ours.
Yep.
And we'll talk to you next week. On the Twitter, I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K. Later.